Get on up. Get up, Billy.
I'm waking up. I'm getting up. I'll be up. Hey, I have some bad news. I hate to start the show off with bad news, but I have some bad news.
What happened?
England is pulling out of our show. They want nothing to do with our show from now on. No more England.
No, hello. Goodbye.
None of that. None of that.
I love this Brexit. I love the term that they coined.
No, can I ask you this? Because the Great Britain leaving the European Union is a fairly serious, not fairly serious, it's a serious thing. So how did it get Brangelina treatment? What happened that put it in the same
British
league?
British exit.
No, I know it stands for British exit, but I was not comfortable when we would take celebrities who were dating and putting their names together. Why are we now taking world political events and putting words together? Are we that lazy? Can we not just say two words anymore?
We're trying to be combined? Clever is what it is. Do you go by Barry or Till with your wife?
When it's Bill and Terry together.
Yes.
I just let people decide on their own.
How about Bit?
Yeah, it's Bit. That's what it is.
What? I don't get it. Please explain. Bit.
Bill and Terry, Bit.
Yeah.
That's still don't get it.
The B-I and the T.
Oh.
Everything, even the shortened
get up.
Versions.
Get up.
Even shortened versions need a second shortening. But you know what I mean, right?
It's like, I know.
A couple of years ago, people decided, well, we can't just have Jennifer Lopez. That takes way, way, way too long. We have to have J-Lo. If Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie are dating, we can't say their names. We have to say Brangelina.
They're trying to be clever. People are trying to be clever, and it's not so much clever.
I don't think it is. I think it's lazy. I think it's all built on laziness.
They will beg to differ and say that they're being creative.
I guess. Steve?
I was just going to tell you, speaking of clever, there's a, and I should have it in front of me here, but there was a trend map from Google searches.
Yeah.
And in the at the midnight hour, so 2 hours after the Brits voted to exit the European Union, the search for what happens if we leave the European Union went up 250%.
Oh, wow.
So in other words, they didn't search it before.
Until it was too late.
Right. They searched it after the closing ends. Here it is. Google Trends Twitter account reported an increase of 250% in people searching what happens if we leave the EU at about midnight British time, 2 hours after the polls closed.
All right. Now, at the risk of sounding incredibly naive, what does it mean and what does it mean to us? I know the markets are reacting very, very quickly to this, but does this change anything in our lives, Steve?
Oh, sure. It'll change quite a few things. I mean, we trade, I think our trade with England, Britain accounts for about 4%. But now all of our trade situations with Great Britain will have to be renegotiated because they're under the European Union. We're now going to have
under.
To. They were. Or yeah. They actually will be for a couple of years or so. While they sort this out. But so now to get a trade agreement with England, you know, we have to work on that. Now, you know, you might think that would be easy. The president has said that we've got more important things to do. It's going to be kind of on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
He said that before the voting, and I think that was sort of in a way trying to prod the people who wanted to remain to get out and vote. There are a number of people, they said that it could probably be about a 0.2 point increase in the unemployment rate in the U.S.
All right, that's significant.
Because of a drop-off in trade in the British businesses. So, yeah. There'll be it'll also be interesting to see a number of companies who have relocated to Britain. You know, we've talked about the inversion to be part of the EU. Now, what will happen with them? Because they will lose some of their advantages, I would imagine, when it comes to trading with the continent.
Does this open floodgates for other countries to say, well, Great Britain's done it, now we'll do it?
That's the big fear. And we'll see if others do leave. There have been votes from time to time, I think. But, what we'll see now is how the EU treats Britain. I mean, are they going to be very friendly and say, okay, see you later, buddy? Or are they going to make it tough on them and say, no, you don't have access to this now, you quit?
Tend to think that option,
right,
wouldn't you?
Well, they would. It is a message to other countries that if you leave the EU, it is not going to be an easy exit. We're going to make it, or an easy Brexit, or Frexit.
It'll be a Frexit when France leaves, Belgium leaves.
A Hexit when Hungary leaves.
Yeah. A Trexit when Donald Trump leaves.
He's there. He's in Scotland.
Yeah, but he's touting his golf course and talking about the amenities before the issues.
He wants to build a wall around the Loch Ness Monster, for heaven's sake.
That's a good idea.
He does want to build a wall in the ocean off Ireland to stop the erosion on one of his golf courses there, even though he's not a global warming supporter. Who is? But this will be interesting to see with Trump, because in a way, Trump's voters prevailed yesterday in England. The older, white, less educated voters who were worried about immigration are many of the people who voted to exit. So it's a similar wave that Boris Johnson and the exit people rode in England that Trump is riding here. Now, so you could say that means good things for Donald Trump when it comes to November, unless people look at the Dow today and see what the outcome is. And it may actually hurt Trump because people might be a little worried about the result.
There's another person who's very happy about it, and keeping in the theme of the word combo platter, Brexit, I have coined a term.
What is your term?
Sinead aside.
Oh, boy, is this... This is insane. What's going on there?
Well, I think somebody hacked into her life because Sinead O'Connor, last night I got an AP alert saying that she had notified some people in Ireland. They received a call here in Chicago from someone in Ireland saying that Sinead O'Connor was suicidal and on a bridge.
And by the way, for people just tuning in, this isn't a rerun show. I know that we had a similar incident with
her. What's today's date, Bill? Hold the newspaper up.
Today is March 9th, 1978. We had a similar story with Sinead O'Connor 3 weeks ago, but this is a reemergence of potential harm with
but
her.
Allegedly, this has been falsified.
Right.
Sinead has surfaced on social media to refute the recent reports that she had gone missing and contemplating suicide. She put a furious Facebook post out there, and she said she is feeling far too F-word happy for that. On Thursday, Chicago police were asked to be on the lookout for a woman on the verge of throwing herself from a bridge, which in turn, they did spot someone threatening to jump from a bridge over a Chicago expressway. It turned out to be a 54-year-old man who they saved and took to the hospital. Oh. So there's some good news to that.
I thought
they saved someone.
They realized it wasn't Sinead O'Connor, and they just moved on. They just went, all right, sorry, we're looking for Sinead O'Connor.
That's not her.
Oh, my God.
Right.
You're both
wouldn't
bald.
That be the worst? That would be the worst thing in the world.
One of my favorite TV stories from the 80s was a young TV reporter was sent out to the Northwest suburbs because there was a big group of people there who were convinced the UFO was going to land that night. So he goes out there. His editor sends him out. He hangs out, comes back to the shop, and like, well, did you get anything? He says, no, nothing happened.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. That's so cute. Well, anyway, she is pleased as punch about this Brexit. And she typed on her Facebook page in all caps, Ireland is officially no longer owned by Britain. Congrats to every man, woman, and child who ever died for the cause of Irish freedom, and also to all those, including myself, who have been persecuted mercilessly by the Irish so-called Free State for having declared support for Sinn Féin and the Republican movement.
Wow.
And then she ended her post with, Ireland 4, England 0.
Wow. That a final from the coast.
Sinead aside.
That's,
I've just combined a new
word. We have
word,
a new word, everyone.
There's your headline.
All right, we need to take a quick break. We have a lot more coming up. If you want to dial us up, 312-981-7200. That's our phone line and our text line. It's Bill Effen. It's Wendy Snyder on WGNs.
Boy, yesterday when I was touting being a Sox fan and saying that Sox fans were smarter than Cubs fans because of the comments listed on the MLB.com team sites.
Right.
The Sox just sucked a duck yesterday.
Well, yeah. I think that
they were behind.
Well,
they caught up.
They had a nice lead late in the game, and they let that slip away, and they had a couple of chances late in the game to make themselves winners, and they didn't, sadly.
I know.
But still, you would take any series. You would take 3 out of 4. You're happy with that, especially against the Red Sox. That's a strong team. But, yeah, that could have been a 4-game sweep. They let that one. And this has been a season where they've let a lot of games slip away that should have been in the W.
That they have a lead.
Yeah.
And they're high-scoring games.
Yeah.
But they're still losing.
Right. Yeah, both the Cubs and the White Sox have lost a lot of one-run games. When the Cubs win, and actually I'll say this about the White Sox, when they win, they tend to win by quite a large margin, but they just keep losing too many one-run games. That's not good.
Thank God October 14th is right around the corner.
Yes.
First Blackhawks game.
Yes.
Against
yes.
the Blues.
Very. It'll happen before you know it.
I think that's game 3 of the Cubs World Series, too.
It is the same day as game 3 of the Cubs World Series.
You guys are so funny.
What will happen? You know, for our lifetime, that's the one thing that has signified, I hate to say it, but the if not the impossible, the near impossible, the Cubs being in a World Series. That's the one thing we all have had in the back of our brains as, well, that's going to be the apocalypse. That's the Armageddon. That's the end. That's the end of days right there, the Cubs in the World Series. So when and if that happens, what's our fallback plan? What's the next thing that we never thought we'd see in our lifetime?
Trump being president.
I was going to say a woman as president. I mean, pick.
If Trump wins, here's the good news, people. If Trump wins,
yeah,
the Cubs will win the World Series, and then the world will end. So, you know, at least we go out with a bang.
Didn't somebody, Steve, you're the perfect person to ask this question of, and I don't know if you'll know it, but I'll ask it anyway. I want to say somebody wrote a book where at the end of the book, the Cubs got to the World Series, and then the world did end. That's spoiler alert, but that's how this book that I can't remember the title of ended.
I don't know that. It sounds like a great ending, though.
It's a perfect
sounds
ending.
Perfect.
You should do that for the Stevie B book club.
You know, that's the when the Cubs were in the World Series song?
Yeah.
When the Cubs.
Yeah.
That was a great.
Win the World Series.
Ryan
yeah.
Sandberg.
Yeah, I do remember that song.
Okay, that's all.
I'll let you have it for a minute. You can just think about
it. You don't remember that song?
No, I remember the song. I just thought you have this moment where you think it's going to happen. Because was it yesterday or 2 days ago was the year anniversary of when the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup. So look at how late the season went for us. God,
right.
I miss hockey.
Yeah. I think the Blackhawks miss it too, which is good because that'd be, not that
fresh.
They didn't have enough motivation, but right, they'll be fresher. And as every hockey expert has explained over and over again, the reason it's so hard to win back-to-back is the season just gets so long and it takes so much out of you.
You need some downtime, Bill.
Yeah, I think so, too. I do.
We still have to work on that promotion where I play Yahtzee with Duncan Keith. Kevin was going to play Magic the Gathering with Nicholas Jalmerson. Who are you going to hang with and do stuff with?
My dream, of course, is to play tennis against Coach Quinville.
Oh, that's right.
I want to play tennis with Coach
Quinville.
That's
what started this whole thing.
Yeah.
That's the legitimate one. The other stuff is just fluff.
Right. So that tells me that yours will happen and Kevin's will happen. And the one that got the whole ball rolling or puck sliding is not going to happen.
Puck drops now.
Right.
Face off.
Let's hope so. I would like that to happen. Now, with this Brexit story, what happens to the woman we talked about yesterday? There's a woman in Texas who had jaw surgery.
Brexit, as we now call
Brexit,
it.
Brexit, right. So she had jaw surgery, and then through some, whatever the opposite of a miracle is, a catastrophe, she now speaks with a British accent. Nobody can understand why. It's foreign accent syndrome. That's the name of the illness that she has.
Again, a condition, and that is the most creative condition ever named.
Foreign accent syndrome. Right.
I
that's
mean,
what
come
she has.
On, get more creative. Well, seriously.
I know. How many scientists had to sit around thinking of that? Well,
what should we call it?
She has a foreign accent, so we could use that. I don't know. I don't know where to go from there.
I still don't believe it. I know that things can happen and nerves can change things, but again, there is no accent center in your brain where wires get crossed and either you have a French accent or
right.
a British accent. It doesn't.
Right.
It doesn't. It's weird.
And she wasn't she didn't have what Robin Williams had. Whereas when she just talked. She would talk with different dialects.
Like
she
Mork? Was just, what are you talking
no,
about?
You know how when Robin Williams was doing stand-up, he would just go into different voices,
oh,
just
yeah.
kind of at random? She didn't. She was a housewife, pretty much. So there's not a lot of call for just speaking with different accents to your kids in Texas.
Right.
That doesn't happen. It was reminding me of, I forgot to mention this yesterday, but it does remind me of this. Remember there was a lady who every time she'd hear Mary Hart's voice, this is when Mary Hart was one of the co-hosts of Entertainment Tonight. So every time Mary Hart was on television doing Entertainment Tonight, this lady would have seizures.
Yes. It was called Mary Hart Syndrome.
Mary Hart, right. I think the same person who named foreign accent syndrome was also behind Mary Hart Syndrome. So she couldn't hear this woman's voice, Mary Hart's. I don't even know if is Mary Hart still doing stuff? I don't know if she's still active. But if she happened to be flipping channels on TV and Mary Hart came on telling you a story about show business, this lady would just have a seizure. That's fairly rare, thankfully. What if everybody had that in them?
Yeah, but to me, that's some kind of tone or something that triggers, because this woman had was suffering from epilepsy, so she would have a seizure. There's some
trigger, right?
Yeah,
right.
But it's not like, you know, all of a sudden she'd have a seizure and then speak with a British accent. Right. That to me is just right. absolutely bizarre.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. But there have been cases of people who will have like a car accident or something, and then after the car accident, they can speak Mandarin, you know?
Really?
And why would that be? I don't understand any of that. I can't figure out I know the brain is a very tricky place, but what would happen where your brain is jostled into that? I don't get it.
It'd be a good thing, as long as you're healthy.
Sure, I guess so.
And you could speak your own language, too.
Right. Right.
I mean, it'd be tough if you just turned to Mandarin and you went home.
Right. Like, no big deal.
Right. You could read the soy sauce bottles, but...
Mary Hart got let go, didn't she, because of that?
No.
All right,
no,
good.
She still worked for a long time after that.
Because, really, that's not a good thing. I know that I have that effect on some people, too, but, you know.
Wouldn't she have a gripe with the union if they fired her just for that?
I guess. <That'd> be... It's just one person, I guess, right. If it was more.
Right.
If there were, like, thousands
right.
of people.
Every
like,
time.
Right.
Like in Mars Attacks, when people's heads would explode.
Right.
There was the Slim Whitman song or something that made their heads explode,
yeah.
spoiler
yeah, yeah.
alert.
So Mary Hart would have been relegated to just holding up cards with stories.
Oh.
You know how you'll see somebody do that on YouTube or something?
Right.
Instead of talking, they'll just hold up cards. Mary Hart would have had to have done that to have kept her job.
Poor thing.
Nobody wants that. Or in Love Actually, when Andrew Lincoln does that to Keira Knightley.
Oh, yeah.
That's what she would have had to have done every night on Entertainment Tonight, just hold up cards with stories on them.
Cheryl, we have a really quick second here. What's up?
Sure, I just want to tell you that Mary Hart thing was also an episode on Seinfeld.
Oh, was it really? I didn't know that. That's funny.
Yeah, Kramer. Every time he heard her voice, he'd have a seizure.
That show was so topical, I'm telling you. Thank you. Have a great weekend, Cheryl.
Thanks, Cheryl.
You too. Bye.
Bye. All right, we need to take a quick break. Steve will give you the news, and then we have a lot more show in front of us, including Charles Peanut Tillman and hunky actor Robert Forster. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks. It's me, Bill Leff. It's her, Wendy Snyder, and it's you. And if you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Later in the show, actor Robert Forster is going to be on with us, and this is interesting for several reasons. I'm a big-time fan, a long-time fan of Robert Forster's, and when his name came up in the office the other day...
You insulted me.
I did insult you. I did, and I apologize.
Explain
I didn't mean to
what
insult.
Happened, because I still don't understand why you questioned me.
Kevin was, every day Kevin has 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 names that he throws out as potential guests. Most of those are imaginary friends of Kevin that wouldn't make sense to talk to on the air. But a lot of them, a couple of them, one of them, has been somebody from the world of show business, and it was Robert Forster. And you got all excited.
I totally did. I'm like, oh, my God, I love him. And Bill, it was a weird thing, too, because Mike, our shadowing intern, I don't really know what his title is.
Shadowing intern.
Okay. Well,
trouble.
He was sitting next to me.
Shadowy intern. Right.
He was sitting next to me, and it's like you guys just ignored the fact that I was gushing over Robert Forster. And then Mike says to me, Robert Forster, he's an actor. I said, I know who he is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And then Bill says to me, really snippily,
yeah.
And Kevin, you were there. Bill goes, oh, you know him?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, I love him. He goes, really? Where do you know him from? I said, why are you challenging me? And you're like, he's a pretty obscure actor. I'm like, Twin Peaks, Jackie Brown. I love him. He's handsome, dark-complected, tall, burly. And you're like,
and then
I'm
you
sorry.
Went on. You kept describing him for like 45 minutes. And we're
she's
like, yeah, okay, you know,
it.
I know.
Well, it kind of bothered me. I know that you're very into movies. Duh.
Well,
listen to the show.
Here's one for you, Bill. You remember the movie Lake Boat?
No, I don't know Lake Boat.
He
what
was
is
in
that?
A movie Lake Boat, which was a film version of a David Mamet play. And I think they filmed it right around here. I mean, it was on a barge, a freighter on the Great Lakes. And I think David Mamet's younger brother even directed it.
Really?
Because I interviewed, I think, Mamet's brother for it. It's
oh, yeah?
15 years ago, yeah.
Does his brother swear as much as David Mamet
it
does?
It was a very short interview. Very
does he swear more than me?
No, not as much as
no
you.
No one does.
Did
no
you
one.
See Alligator? Because he was an alligator there.
He's Robert Forster's money in the bank. He's always good, and as you mentioned, always burly too.
Just such a handsome man, and it really kind of offended me because first of all,
I didn't mean to offend you. I'm impressed that you know so much. You know a lot about him.
Well, tell your face that you were impressed because you were really snotty to me.
The pictures in your purse were a little much.
I know. I'm sorry.
At least you're over it now, Wendy.
Well, it just I really don't see a lot of movies. We were talking about this off the air, Kevin.
But that's why it was so shocking to me is because you don't see a lot of movies.
Yeah, but I used to before I had kids.
Oh, all right.
And that's when I saw most of his stuff.
Yeah. You're not confusing him with Forrest Whitaker. Are you?
No, but no. I love him too.
No.
What was he in?
Or Steve Forrest from
the Shield.
SWAT.
That's who I was trying to think of.
Steve Forrest?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, typically you don't question me.
I usually do not.
But you were like, oh, really? Where do you know him?
I thought you were dreaming. I didn't think you knew so much about
him. I was dreaming of him.
You got very excited.
He is a handsome gentleman.
Yeah.
Although, I have weird crushes.
I've noticed that the people you tend to have crushes on aren't your standard matinee idol types, although Robert Forster
is the one.
Those are classic good looks.
I think he's like the only guy that we could classify as handsome.
My crushes?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you review some of them with us? Because there's
crazy.
No pattern at all. There's zero pattern.
Seth Rogen. I have a terrible crush on him.
Not handsome. Funny, though.
But it doesn't have to be handsome-based. It can be personality-based.
Well, that's what crushes are. You find something in them that, like, gets you excited.
Nancy Walker.
The quicker picker-upper she is.
She sure is. That's a Spitfire, is that Nancy Walker.
That is the funniest thing you've ever said. And I don't question you. Really, what's she been in? You really know who that is?
Sometimes with just her apron on.
Sometimes. Not always.
Here's the weirdest crush I have. It's really specific and really weird.
Who would it be?
It's Gene Hackman.
That is weird.
It gets weirder. Only in the movie The Royal Tenenbaums.
That's beyond weird.
I know.
Why would that be?
I don't know.
If you were going to go Gene Hackman, you'd go French Connection.
Yeah, I know. But for some reason, it's the polyester suit. It's the long hair.
Does he remind you of somebody in that movie?
I don't know. I just really found myself crushing on him when I was watching The Royal Tenenbaums.
That's so strange.
I know.
So how would you react to that? Like, what would you do? Like, how did you handle yourself during that?
I did handle myself.
That's today's show. Roll will be in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I'm dizzy.
We all are, Wendy.
A crowd has gathered outside the studio.
I just was looking at him, and I liked the movie, but I found myself going, God, I'm attracted to him.
Really?
I know. It's very weird. Crushes are inexplainable. I mean, I have, like, hot crushes, too, like Keanu Reeves.
Now that makes sense.
Kevin, what?
No, that's fine. I'll give
that
you that
makes
one.
Sense.
Both of you are so jealous of everyone else. Anyone I mention. Not really.
Keanu knows Kung Fu, so I'm jealous of that.
Ashton Kutcher.
But that's
fine.
All right, but
what do you mean fine?
No, you're fine. Yeah, sure.
But those guys are the same type. Like, you go, okay, well, then that's Wendy's crush type is Ashton Kutcher or
hot
Keanu Reeves.
That's what I like.
I didn't say that.
Then there's Wilmer Valderrama. That one's a little weird to me.
Yeah, he's pretty cute. You guys.
But
really...
again, that's the same. That's the same general set.
Exactly.
Steve Buscemi.
I don't have a crush on him, but he's one of my favorite actors.
All right.
He is a crazy whack job.
Yeah.
And I love him.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Gene Hackman and the Royal Tenenbaums is the
weirdest.
And
you can't even figure it out. It's your crush,
exactly.
But you can't figure that out. Now, when I was a kid, I believe I told you this. This is the first person I ever had a crush on, and it was insane what this would do to me, is when Claudine Lunger was on any Andy Williams special.
She was beautiful in her sweaters.
I was 4 or 5 years old, and I would, like...
Very mature for
I
your age.
I would close the door to whatever room I was in and just stare at her and just sometimes go, what if something happened between she and Andy Williams? But even then, I was a little kid. What that wouldn't have happened.
And something did, right?
Something ended, yeah. Well, they
Who
broke
got
up.
Shot?
Spider Savage.
Shot her?
No. She accidentally... shot him
because you love her,
right? Glad you weren't on the jury.
I had to testify at the trial.
You did not.
I said she's a delicate creature who would never shoot Spider Savage. Please. Mercy of the court. Please.
It worked out to your best interest that you didn't hook up with her.
But you know how, I don't know if you experienced this when you were a little girl, but when I was that age, I didn't understand how insane I was for her. I would just stare at the television. I wouldn't even blink.
You'd close the door and be in the room all by yourself?
I had to build, it was the living room. We didn't even have a door in the living room. I would build a door and close it and just stare at her and just go, wow, Claudine Lange.
How did you handle it?
Don't. All right, we need to take a break, and I'm going to take a shower. I'm going to take a very cold shower, and then we'll come back and there's more show. Do you have a strange celebrity crush? It doesn't make sense. Why would you like this person? Who is it? 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Later on in the show, as we mentioned, actor Robert Forster, one of Wendy's, one of Catwoman's crushes. I know him from Banyan. Remember the TV show Banyan?
Yes, I do.
He was on Banyan. He's been in so many things. But we're trying to chart your crushes, and we've got Robert Forster, and we've got Gene Hackman, and we've got Keanu Reeves, and we've got Seth Rogen, Wilder Valderrama.
Ashton
Kutcher.
Everyone has a crush on Ashton. Come on, don't you kinda?
Well, a healthy one. Sure,
all right.
Sure.
That's all I was wondering. Yeah.
Here's the test. Kevin?
Kevin doesn't think anyone is cute or strong that's a guy. Can I just say that?
Well, myself. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Handsome recognizes handsome. That's
the quote from Kevin. That's what he said last week, and it holds true.
We got to get a hold of the microphone during the toast at his wedding and go, yeah, well, handsome recognizes handsome.
Right.
You guys are uninvited.
So who is your celebrity crush? We'll try to figure it out. I can't guarantee anything.
All right. We are going to talk to Patty. And Patty, do you have an unexplainable crush as well?
Well, my friends don't get it, but I love Brian Dennehy, Vincent D'Onofrio, and then if he would just talk dirty to me, Rick Cogan.
Rick Cogan would talk dirty to you.
He would. We can give you his home number.
We can do that in 10 minutes.
He would pay you. That never happens, but he would give you money.
Oh, stop. I love him. He's got the best gravelly old-time reporter voice.
Yes, he does.
You know, Robert Forster has a bit of a gravel voice going on, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's all part of the appeal.
I can see that. That makes perfect sense. All right.
And then Vincent D'Onofrio, too.
Yeah.
He's attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Brian Dennehy. People don't get that because he could be almost my grandfather. But
can I tell you why I can't ever have a crush on him? Because he played John Wayne Gacy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that ruined it for me.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
He was just in an episode.
Thanks a lot, Wendy.
Yeah, sorry.
You ruined a celebrity crush.
Ruined it.
He was just in an episode of The Blacklist about 2 or 3 months ago. He was really good. I hadn't seen him in anything in years.
I saw him in The Longest Play on the Planet.
That was the name of it?
Yeah, The Longest Play on the Planet in Chicago. Yeah, I don't want to mention it because it was good. But
is it Nicholas Nickleby?
It was 3 or 4 hours long. It was. Hmm. I had to pee so badly I couldn't stand it.
The sign of a good play.
Well, have a great weekend, and thanks for sharing. We'll have Rick Cogan call you later.
Okay.
Don't act shocked when he does, because he will.
Okay.
Thanks, Patty.
Okay,
bye.
Thanks.
You should get her number. We should do that. Hurry
Hello,
up.
Hello, I have a story to tell you. Uh-oh.
Oh, you should have just thumbed it.
No.
Come on, you do a very good Rick Cogan.
No, thank you.
You got to smoke more, though.
All right.
Laura has a crush, too. Hi, Laura.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Laura, we're outstanding. Do you have a crush that is unexplainable? It's just somebody you wouldn't normally have a crush on, but you do?
Well, I don't know if it's unexplainable. I like Ray Liotta.
Yeah, I can see that.
He's met him in person, and those blue eyes just sucked you in.
Yeah, penetrating.
Wow. There's just something like Italian, street guy that I just find so sexy. I don't like pretty boys. Like, I don't like Brad Pitt. There's nothing, he doesn't do anything for
me.
But something about Ray Liotta.
He's a gritty, tough guy.
He seems dangerous, doesn't he? There's trouble near Ray Liotta, I would think.
Yeah, the other guy this is not really a crush, but the guy that I absolutely love, his comedy, that I would love to meet and have a conversation with, would be Louis Black.
Yeah.
I just think, I love him. He's so nuts.
Yeah.
I do love him.
I met him once, but it was at a funeral, so it's hard to gauge based on that. But he is a very funny guy.
Was he performing?
No, he was a friend of, we were mutual friends of the person who had died. But he's, Louis Black is very funny. I could see that crush.
Yeah.
I have another crush, too. You're bringing up comedian Stephen Wright. I find hot.
Thanks.
Oh my God, really?
No.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
He's funny, but I don't know.
Not the crush, though.
No.
Huh? All right.
Well, thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Laura.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
How does Jimmy react if one of these people is on TV or in a movie and you obviously have a crush on them? What is your husband's reaction to this?
I don't think he knew till now.
Oh, is that true? Have you held all these back from him?
Well, I mean, it's not something you go come home and say, hey, honey, guess what?
Right.
Just save it for the radio.
Right.
Well, maybe he's busy.
At one time, there was an episode of Friends where they each got a list of five people that if for some reason they were in the same company as these people, they got a free pass to be romantic with them.
And that list caused tons of conversation between couples everywhere.
Sure it did.
Because didn't you have that conversation with your wife?
Yeah. On my list, I won't give you the whole list, and it was supposed to be five, but I had 32 on my list.
Oh, jeez.
On my list of five, after I was told I needed to break it down, was Maureen McCormick, who played Marsha Brady. And I didn't know at the time that just 2 weeks later, she would be a guest on the show that I was hosting at another radio station. And my co-host on the show mentioned to her the story about me having a list and her name being on it. And then she was extremely flirtatious, and I should have asked her to stop, but I did not. I don't remember any of it. You know how I can remember stuff from when I was two or three years old? I don't remember any of the interview. I just remember once it was established that I had a crush on her and that she was on that five-person list, she kept caressing my shoulder and rubbing my back and playing with my hair and stuff like that. And I don't remember any of it. I've seen the pictures. People have shown me pictures. Her or me? Her, right?
Her.
Yeah, her.
You know who was on the top of my list was Keanu Reeves.
Yep.
And the weirdest story is on our honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
We were on our way to Hawaii. We stopped in L.A. We had a little bit of a layover. I went outside to have a cigarette. I was out on the bench. And lo and behold, there's a guy that walks by with a girl who looks very much like Keanu Reeves.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before cell phones. He had a neck brace on. So I'm like, I wish I could, you know, I had no phone to check. But when we got to the hotel, he had been in a motorcycle accident, and it was him.
Oh.
And it was on our honeymoon. And I said, I just saw Keanu Reeves. And Jim said, nope, there is no way. I said, list. He goes, honeymoon.
Yeah, it doesn't count
honeymoon
on honeymoon.
Trumps the list.
Doesn't count on honeymoon. But it's also weird that you and I went and saw him after a show at another station. We went to meet with him. He was shooting a movie here in town. And you don't remember any of that night.
It's starting to come back to me. But look, you don't remember much of the Maureen McCormick thing.
I remember none of it.
When you have hearts coming out of your eyes, you can't focus.
Yeah, everything changes, right?
It does. I had my chance with Keanu.
I think you'll have another chance with him.
He is the nicest guy in the world. Have you seen that little video going around? He has a sister who has some kind of condition that he donated like all the money from one of his movies to the foundation, and he gave up his seat. You saw that video on the
in a subway or something. Yeah.
He's just like the sweetest, nicest guy. And Keanu, of course, means
cool breeze
in Hawaiian.
Hawaiian cool breeze. You were in Hawaii. Hey, cool
breeze.
We
were on the way to Hawaii. It's all meant to be. It'll happen a couple of years
from
now.
I'm sure it will. I bet it will. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, then more of your thoughts at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Found a peanut, found a peanut, found a peanut just now. Cracked it open, cracked it open, cracked it open.
You look embarrassed.
Charles, if you punch anyone, let it be Bill. He wanted that to be the intro song for you.
Speechless.
I've never heard crack a peanut, crack a peanut, crack a peanut, something else.
I like your version better. If I'm doing an iTunes, I'm doing your version of that
song. I've never
song.
Seen it.
That's
I've,
beautiful.
I've never heard that version before. That's very nice. Classy.
Charles Peanut Tillman is here, one of the finest to ever don a Bears uniform, and I'm talking about forever. Boy, do I miss you as a member of the Chicago Bears.
I miss it, too. I had some good times. Real good times. Great teammates.
Not anymore. We are sucking big time here in Chicago.
I have nothing to do with that.
Yeah,
I have nothing to do with that.
Doesn't that feel good? You don't have anything to do with
it? I do. It wasn't my fault. I did my part. I did what I was supposed to do. And, But I had a blast in Carolina. I had a blast in Charlotte.
It seemed. It seemed like you did.
Yeah.
Now, Wendy will tell you this. I'm not just making this up because you're here. My argument with the Bears is every time we get a guy like you or like Matt Forte who just seems to know what to do on the field, mm-hmm. management says, well, that's not the kind of player we want, and then they send them elsewhere, and that disturbs me.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they get paid the big bucks to make those decisions. They made it clear that they were in a different direction when, you know, the new administration got in, and, hey, I respect it. It's the business, and I packed my bags and I went elsewhere. So,
but you didn't have a hard time finding work. You found work immediately.
No, no. Yeah. I mean, it's good to be. How can I say this in a good way?
Popular.
It's good to be somewhere where you're wanted.
Sure.
And Charlotte wanted me. Yeah. Or the Carolinas, you know, they wanted me, and such a warm embrace from the fans there in the city of Charlotte. And I had a blast. Not to say that there's, you know, Chicago, and I get it all the time from Chicago fans, like, you know, we wish you the best, we wish you were back here, and yeah, I had some great times, great experiences in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I still live here, you know. Mm-hmm. Chicago is home, but you know, that this last year, you know, spending a year in Charlotte, you know, with those fans and just that community, that area, it was like a second home. It was very nice, very nice.
That's awesome. Last time we spoke to you, we were talking about middle school rules, real life, real lessons, real inspiration. I love that book.
Thank you.
It is the sweetest little book ever.
Thank you.
I gave it to my kids. We looked at it. We read it together, parts of it. I just love it. And now you're putting people together for this celebrity pro bowler tournament. I don't know how to say it, so it's pro bowl. It's playing
pro
on that.
Bowler. Yeah, you
pro
got
bowler
it.
Tournament.
You got it.
I was telling you off the air, how do you impress a Peanut Tillman? I said, I own my own bowling ball. It's an 8-pounder.
Yeah.
And you said, impressive. Well, then you must be good if you,
you
own your own bowling ball.
If you guys
own
8-pounder, you must be good.
Well, it's not, you know, when you're a little kid, you use a heavy ball and you roll it slowly and mm-hmm. kind of push it down there because the weight of the ball will knock the pins down.
Right.
But as you get older and realize that there's a little bit of an art form to it, the lighter ball is better because you can control it. You need some tips on your pro bowling tournament?
I'm going to do that.
Try an 8-pounder.
I will do that.
That might be too light.
That'll
for
be
you.
My new thing.
What's your background with bowling? Did you bowl as a kid? Have you bowled much as an adult?
You know, the one time I really bowled a lot as a kid, I lived in Germany. I was in Pirmasens, Germany, and we went bowling every Wednesday. And this is when bowling was like 50 cents.
Yeah.
You know, we bowled a game. Each game was like 50 cents. Yeah. 50 cents a person. And we would, you know, we would walk to the little bowling, or we took a bus to the little bowling alley on posts, and that was our weekly thing that we
did. You
were
in a military family.
I was a military family, yeah. Yes, sir. And yeah. Had a blast. I learned how to
it's
keep.
It's fun.
I love it. I mean, it's good for old people, young yeah. people, middle class people, first date, second date, bowling league. You
that
know,
is
if you,
a good
if you,
first date.
If you work nights and all your friends are working during the day and you don't have crap to do,
yeah.
get in a bowling league.
That's what I did with yeah. a bunch of gray-haired ladies in Forest Park, and they ran me ragged. Their averages were probably 180, 190.
Wow.
They were so good.
I think the most I've ever bowled, 165.
That's not bad. That's not too bad.
I've only done it like once or twice, though.
Still, that's not too bad.
You only are so humble.
Twice. I want to get in the 200s, though.
Yeah?
That's the goal.
Is that one of your goals?
Got to get in the 200s, yeah.
I know you'll agree with me. There's nothing more romantic than wearing rented shoes.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
Funny thing, I need to get my own shoes. Yeah. I should, because it's disgusting if you really... If, at the end of the day, if you really think about it, all the stank... crusted, just nastiness on people's feet.
Can I give you a tip? If you ask them nice, you can rent socks from them too. You
oh,
have to ask
God,
really
Bill.
Plainly though.
No, I don't think I'm gonna do the sock thing. I'm gonna always have socks.
They spray the Lysol in
sure.
there. You're only wearing it for a short time when
right.
you're bowling.
It's fine.
You don't sweat
I think
that
I
much
can
when you bowl.
My own bowling shoes. I might just do that. Even though I might bowl once a year, I think it's still
worth
it to get your yeah. own bowling shoes.
So tell us about your celebrity pro bowler tournament. It's at King's Bowl in Lincoln Park, and it's happening in July. That much I know.
July 14th.
All right.
Lincoln Park, King's Bowling Alley. Myself, my teammates, former teammates, Jared Payton, Jerry Azuma, Dante Thompson, Matt Forte, Robert Griffin III,
wow.
RG3.
Wow.
Cappy Pondexter, WNBA, just myself, these... public figure celebrities, if you want to call them that.
Quite a roster.
Bowling. Yeah, we just go out and make it, raise some money for a good cause. Proceeds go towards the Cornerstone, Charles Sturman Cornerstone Foundation.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, it's going to be a lot of fun. We still have teams available. Or if you just want to come out, have a drink, have a good time. You don't want a bowl, but you just want a drink.
Yeah.
You can go to the website, charlesturman.org, click under events. You can buy your tickets there. And it's just one big party, man. We're drinking, we're bowling, we're playing pool, we're playing air hockey. You know, they got a bunch of billiard games.
We should
pinball.
Go. This is like
you
got
pinball.
Pinball.
I'm in.
Yeah, it's so just a great atmosphere in Kings. They are a first class bowling alley, and they know how to. Great food.
Yeah.
Not like. Not like bad, crappy bowling alley food with like the cheap, crappy nachos. I'm talking about like really good. 4-star restaurant food.
They have ribs and they dropped off.
Wait,
some
is
pizza
that Kings
with,
who
yes.
dropped off? Oh,
yes.
Wow,
yes,
were they good?
They got really good food.
Those
it's
are
not,
the
it's
best
not
ribs
like,
ever.
It's not like your typical bowling alley food.
Yeah.
Come for the food and bowl a game.
Sure.
Yeah, and drink.
Why
that's,
not?
That's
well,
a given.
You know, right. it's the weather gonna be nice.
Yeah.
Drink a beer, whatever you want. Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
There's no downside to this, Wendy. There's no downside. Charles Peanut Tillman is here. If you want to call in, if you want to text in, 312-981-7200.
Please call. I'm good at asking or answering questions.
He will answer your questions.
What topic do you want to talk about?
Oh, man, I'm a man. I'm the most interesting black man in the world.
The most in the world?
In the world. Or in Chicago right now. So I can answer any and everything.
Here's a little...
We can talk politics.
You're gonna
we can talk medicine.
You're going to get a lot of Brexit questions. You know that.
Medical,
yeah.
Brexit,
everything.
Brexit, how you say it?
You can say it any way you want. I'm
Breast
not going to tell you you're saying
yeah.
it wrong.
Bake it.
All right, listeners, this is where we need you to come through because he's a man of his word. He can talk about anything. So come
beer,
up with a question.
Relationships.
Everything.
312-981-7200. Ask Charles Peanut Tillman a question about anything and you'll answer it.
I'm an expert just for the next 40 seconds on everything.
Call fast, 312-981-7200.
Anything past 40 seconds,
then
you
there's
SOL.
Stay where you are, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Former Chicago Bear, great current Carolina Panther, Charles Peanut Tillman in the studio with us. We're talking about your celebrity pro bowler tournament. It's happening at Kings Bowl, Lincoln Park, Thursday, July 14th. For all the info on that, you can go to your website, charlestillman.org. And you said you're the smartest black man in the world. Did he not say that?
I said that 30 seconds ago, and my 30
the rankings
seconds
have
is
changed.
Over. So now I'm your average Joe.
Oh, that's
the rankings
fine.
Have changed.
That's all right.
The break took too long. It took too long.
I know. That's what the listeners say, too. But we have people who have questions for you, and this is Carson on the line. Carson, Peanut.
Uh-oh.
Mr. Peanut Tillman, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Carson. How you doing?
One, we miss you. And two, so I have these chocolate chip cookie recipes, and I've tried sprinkles. I've tried everything under the book, but I was wondering... what do you think is probably one of the better ingredients to add to a chocolate chip cookie recipe?
I would probably say vanilla extract. You know, maybe
look
that.
At you. Yeah. You know your way around well, a spice
that
rack,
would,
don't
that
you?
Would, that might sweeten it up a little bit. You know, maybe you got to throw a little bit more flour, some egg,
yep. M&M's,
M&M's, you know,
yeah.
Maybe some white chocolate.
There you go.
Yeah. All good options.
That's a great answer. You
yes.
do know everything.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking it easy on
good
me.
Good luck with the cookies.
Good luck with them cookies.
Those are going to be good.
All right. Do you post your cookie recipe on Pinterest? Are you on Pinterest?
I am not on Pinterest.
Oh, my God. I love it. It's so fun for recipes.
Oh, okay. I'm a tasty guy on Facebook.
What does that mean?
Oh, God. I love watching
you ever watch
that.
Those videos? I am the tasty king. I just got excited. My voice
what,
got
you're
it.
You're all right.
No, my voice got loud.
What does that mean?
It's
you're the
a
tasty
video.
So you, oh, yeah. Explain it. Go
you
for
can't.
It.
It's
I
just,
love
it,
your voice.
It's
go
a,
for it.
Thank you. It's a bird's eye view.
Take that, Robert Forster.
It's a bird's eye view of people making these interesting recipes. I'm trying to think of one of the great ones they had. They had like a tater tot, jalapeno popper
yeah.
casserole. They show you how to make it real quickly. It's all sped up. It's fun to watch.
And it's about a 60-second video of how to make a meal.
Anything.
Anything.
And then do you in
yes,
turn try it and make
I
it
do.
Yourself?
My
you
daughter
do.
And I, in return, we go and we watch it and we make, we replicate that.
Really?
And the food is amazing.
Oh, wow.
The recipes
right.
are pretty
it's good.
Great.
It's really good.
That sounds good.
And
right.
it shows you how honestly simple it is to cook.
It is. And they put it on, it's like a hot plate.
Yeah.
and it's all on one pilot, and you cook whatever
in the
lasagna
skillet,
in the skillet. You
it's
cook
awesome.
Everything.
That sounds excellent. All right,
everything
I'll try
you
that.
Bake. I've made churro cups. I made this churro cup, and I
put
ice
cream
in
it.
Oh, you saw that?
I
one.
Saw that.
Oh, it was so good. I'm hungry now.
Now you've made Charles hungry.
I love
Wendy.
That. You
I made my own pasta. I made some ravioli. I've made the sweet and sour chicken. I've made the cheese sticks. I'm telling you, I've made so much food off
it
of this website.
Good.
It's amazing.
You know, we all like fried things. Admit it. I mean, fried food's awesome.
We're American.
The trick to it is they put it in an egg bath. Then in flour, then back in the egg bath, and then the panko breadcrumbs.
Yes. It's like flour. Yeah, it's just that right there.
I didn't know
right
you double dipped in the eggs.
Yes, or cornstarch.
What does the cornstarch do?
So you can. I made sweet and sour chicken.
Yeah,
and then I had some cornstarch and I had egg. So I dip it in the cornstarch and I put it in egg. Then I fry it. The cornstarch gives it more of a crunch.
Ah.
It kind of gives it that Chick-fil-A effect, more crunchy. And then in the cornstarch, I put, you know, all my seasoning in the cornstarch, and then I put the meat, the chicken, whatever, in there. And
oh,
then
that
the
does
egg.
Sound good.
So that instead of flour.
That yeah, so it gives good. It more of a crunch, yeah. And it stays better, too.
You do know everything.
I'm trying.
All right,
I'm
we
trying.
Have one more question for you, and this is, I'll let you explain it. Leslie, this is Charles Peanut Tillman, a guy who knows everything.
Yeah, I love that. I love you guys. And Peanut Tillman, we went to your thing a couple of years ago. We took my little girl and you signed a card for her. It was when you guys played football against, like, regular people. I don't remember the name of it.
Oh, the flag football. Was it the flag football tournament that we used to do?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Okay.
Yes, we were there.
So it was a bunch of Bears against regular people playing in this game?
Well, you get a celebrity quarterback, one of my teammates, and then it would be average Joes.
Oh, that's a good idea.
We were the athletes, us, we were all-time quarterback.
Nice.
And just flag. It wasn't tackle.
Some people got a little carried away, and it became tackle. But ask your question, Leslie. I'm listening to you, sweetheart.
Okay, so I have a best friend who lost, I guess it comes down to she lost trust in her husband. He took some money and sent it out of the country and told her a bunch of baloney, and she's really freaked out, but she's still with him. But how do I tell her to get out, or do I tell her to try to trust him again? He's trying, but he's not, he's, you know, it's been a while and he's doing good. But
this is a terrible tragedy. Bill, why are you laughing? Because are you thinking of what Charles Tillman's going to say to this?
I'm just thinking, I bet when this day started, Charles, you would not be fielding this question, but here it is.
No, I didn't. Okay, Leslie, here's what I'm going to say. How well do you know this woman?
Very well. A very best friend.
Okay, so...
And this totally came out of left field with the husband. They've been happily married for 10-plus years.
They have a close relationship, Leslie and her friend, so she can be honest.
Okay.
Have a heart-to-heart, right?
Right.
This is a tough one.
It is.
He knows,
I'm rolling my eyes.
Right. Right.
Oh, God.
This is her true love.
Yeah, but is he really a true love? Yeah, but look at him now.
I think they dated
when they were 17. They got together in their 30s, and then, you know, life progressed, and he just, you know.
And he's messing her up now. He's stealing from her.
So I think what you need to do, Leslie, is go talk to your friend. Have a heart-to-heart conversation and explain to her and talk to her and make sure you come off make sure she receives it in the right way, because obviously that's her true love, and she going to stick by her man. Say it in a very heartfelt way. I'm worried about you. And don't really throw him under the bus. Just say, I'm just concerned about a few things, and I just want to make sure you're okay.
And I'm here for you.
And I'm here for you if you need me. And then let her make her decision.
That's such good advice. You're like Delilah.
Oh, yeah.
You're Chalila.
Leslie,
good luck with that.
That's sad.
I'm sorry.
All right, we have one guy who just wants to talk to you, Jim. We have a second here. Get to it and change the subject, will you, Charles? Or excuse me, Jim.
Jim, I'm really going to change the subject. Hey, Charles, I was lucky enough to be at the Super Bowl when you guys played down there at the rain-drenched Miami and caught your glove on the way as you came off the field. How can I possibly get that cherished thing signed?
Maybe go to the bowling event.
Would you do it, Charles?
Yeah.
You'd do it there, yeah?
Jim, right?
Yes. Yeah, Jim is right.
Yeah, come to the event July 14th, King's Bowling Alley. I'm going to be there. A couple other guys will be there. You can get everyone to sign the glove.
Oh, that's so nice.
How about that?
I just want you to sign the glove.
That's okay, I'll sign it, Jim. I'll sign it.
Right. I want to try it on. I want to see if that glove fits.
It might not fit me no more. My fingers are a little swollen and slightly dislocated.
That's what OJ said.
Yeah.
No.
If it don't fit, you must have quit.
Oh, no.
Right. I appreciate what you've done for the Bears. You're my favorite guy there for the last 20 years. It's just a wonderful – it's bad that we don't have you anymore. But,
thank you. I appreciate that. You're kind, sir.
No, I'm honest.
Well, I appreciate your honesty.
Jim, attend the event, and Charles will sign the glove for you.
Thanks, guys.
All right,
later, Jim.
Thank you.
All right, go to charlestillman.org, and all the deets once again. This is Charles Tillman hosting Celebrity Pro Bowler Tournament. It's King's Bowl. It's in Lincoln Park, Thursday, July 14th. Anything else we need to know? Where do we get your book?
Stay hydrated.
Stay hydrated.
Stay hydrated. Solid advice.
That's so true.
If you want the book, a copy, your own personal copy of the book, you can go to Amazon.com. It's there. There's a Barnes & Noble in Skokie. They have a copy of my mm-hmm. books out there if you're in the Skokie area. Hit me up on Facebook, but better off hit me up on Instagram or Twitter at Peanut Tillman. What else? I'm a Pisces. I love to cook.
Sure.
I don't like long walks on the beach.
You don't?
I don't.
Get right to the point.
I'm not a sand guy. Just get right to the point. And I love barbecue. What else?
Perfect. So invite him over this weekend, listeners.
Why wouldn't you? Great
to
see you.
I like doing radio. I like coming on this show.
Come by more
Chicago,
often.
Chicago, you guys are amazing. Please come support
anytime.
And awesome calls. Thank you.
Listen,
thanks,
we could
Charles.
Do a. We should do an advice segment with Peanut.
Yeah.
You want to do
Let's
that?
Let's do it once a month.
I would once a month, but they can't be too serious.
No, that's all right. Leslie,
if you listen, sweetheart, you had me sweating bullets. I was trying to give you like a true, honest answer.
You spoke from your heart.
And I spoke from my heart. Yep. And I'm sure, just again, make sure you say it in a nice way so she can receive it in a nice way. Because she will be hesitant because it's her man and she going to defend her man. She going to hold it down for him. So just make sure you say it in a nice way.
Smartest man in the world.
Sage advice from Charles Peanut Tillman.
Thank you,
Charles. We appreciate it. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
A couple of things before we introduce our buddy Kurt Wagner. First of all, who brought the Star? What are these?
Those are Starburst fruit chews. Taste the rainbow. Oh, wait, that's Skittles. They're still good. Whatever.
All right. Who brought them in this morning?
I did.
Why?
Well, there's a sale on Starburst at Walgreens. Buy one, get one free, and I'm no fool.
All right, but these are the berry ones, so thank you for those. I only like the strawberry. And I asked Peanut Tillman if he liked Starburst, and he goes, of course. So I threw him one. He goes, you know how to unwrap it without using your hands? And I said, no. He put a Starburst in his mouth, and for, about 20 seconds later, he spit out the wrapper.
That's right. That was talented. And it was interesting seeing him catch it. You threw it to him and he caught it. It wasn't like when Jay Cutler was throwing stuff to him where he didn't stand a chance. You threw it in his vicinity and he caught it.
Yeah, he did.
It was fun. And then, how gutsy a guy is he? For people who don't know how Michigan Avenue is set up, there's these little kind of, how do you describe this? It's a turnaround.
Cul-de-sac?
Yeah. It's so that...
Half-circle drive?
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. But you're not
allowed
to...
It's right by the river.
Right. There's one on our side, and then there's one over by the Wrigley Building on the other side of Michigan Avenue.
For a cab to pull in?
So that you can turn and go the other way. It's a little area to turn around.
No, you can't turn and go the other way, because if you go in that half circle, there are all these flower boxes, so you couldn't turn around and go the other way. It's for cabs or something.
Or it's for dropping people off.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I guess.
But no one parks there. You can't park there, but Charles Tillman does. And that went unchallenged.
He did just stroll out of here, put his sunglasses on, and go over to his car.
I don't know if there was there might have been a sign on his car that says, this is Charles Tillman's car.
Leave me be for a minute.
Let me be. I'm Charles Tillman. I'm going to start putting that on my car. This is Charles Tillman's car.
You would get either towed or booted in about 30 seconds.
We watched him walk back to his car, and we're like, well, he couldn't have parked there. Nobody parked there, but he got in and then
drove away. It's not like somebody was waiting for him.
Right.
I love
him. That's gutsy. Kurt Wagner's here, equally as gutsy Kurt Wagner. He's got a great website, TVshowpatrol.com, and he comes on with us on Friday, and we discuss television. Wendy received some bad news, Kurt, and I think you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I do. I saw it when I heard the news. I thought I would
Bobby Cannavale.
Right, yeah. Vinyl has been canceled after it was renewed.
That's not
It was
fair.
Renewed after the first episode, and HBO canceled
right.
it now.
Because they had some little infighting going on?
Well, they had got a new showrunner, and were all set up to start over and yeah. retool it. They hadn't done any scripts or anything, but they now have a new head of drama, and I think that they just decided to, what's it called? Cut bait?
Well, you know, the ratings for the
How's
show... Yeah, you can say cut bait. That's accurate. The ratings for the show were not stellar.
No.
But just to have Martin Scorsese working on a project.
And Mick Jagger. And Mick Jagger's son,
yeah.
who looks just like him.
Yeah. Well, everybody felt it was kind of a hot mess except you, Wendy.
Seriously? But how do you renew something and then just go, only kidding?
Well, I think they just figured, you
Damn
know,
them.
Our money will be better spent on something else.
Right. Now, HBO, this is interesting because HBO is in a weird kind of period right now. For a while, everything they touch turned to gold. But right now, other than, I guess, Game of Thrones.
I don't even have HBO anymore.
You don't even have HBO?
No.
Yeah.
So how has the mighty fallen so fast?
There's a little suffering on the marquee dramas right now.
Yeah, they are.
And, it's all FX
and they've had
and
a
AMC.
Lot of they've had a lot of problems with development, too. Like that Westworld that was supposed to start, I think, winter of this year is now not looking like it's going to go until maybe this, like, until January of next year.
Oh, wow.
They continue to have problems with that. They've just cut the Lewis and Clark thing that they were going to do. They just after a lot of development on that, decided not to do it. And there were a couple other shows that worked the same way.
Really?
That they just dumped.
There was a time where if you looked at the best shows on television, HBO easily had three or four
right.
or five of
well,
them.
Well, it's interesting. They still, the TCA, the Television Critics Association nominations mm-hmm. just came out this week, and they were still the top.
Oh, were they still?
Dogs.
Yeah.
But you know, there's some concern. And they still have good comedies, but there's some concerns that the once Game of Thrones, which is winding down, is done, that they're sort of low on their marquee
They just
dramas.
I know this fall under it falls under comedy, but Curb Your Enthusiasm, we just got the announcement
right.
about a week ago, less than a week
and
ago.
And I'm sure
that's
HBO
coming back.
Is whoosh,
yeah.
I'm so happy.
I'll get it again.
That's coming yeah. back.
I'll get HBO because of that.
But, you know, and so there's a lot of sort of hand-wringing and people are talking about and pundits are writing about, you know, is this the end of HBO? Is Netflix, you know, sort of driven a stake through their heart? But I saw an interesting story earlier this week that talks about how in 2008 they were facing the same sort of thing. The Sopranos was mm-hmm. over and the Sex and the City had ended. And then they had John from Cincinnati and in treatment and they weren't getting...
They didn't
attention.
Get any kind of attention. Yeah.
yeah. So, you know, they were a little stuck, and then along came True Blood. And True Blood sort of rejuvenated them.
Yeah.
And then they had Boardwalk Empire, and then they started to get all this new round of things. So, you know, it's sort of this writer was saying, you know, it's a cyclical thing,
sure.
and it's just going to happen. Yeah.
That's true. That's life. It's cyclical.
Yeah.
Somebody keeps texting us every week when you're on. Don't know if it's a guy or girl, but wants to know. Please ask him when the last season of Hell on Wheels will be on Netflix.
Oh, well, it's right now on AMC, so I would imagine.
It takes a while.
Yeah, I would imagine within 6 months.
Because I'm trying to see the last season, or the last season of Better Call Saul, and they don't have it yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought I saw Better Call Saul on Amazon.
It's okay. Somebody has it, because I know that's,
yeah, but
I watched it lately.
Oh, like Amazon Prime?
I thought so.
Oh, I'll look
But
maybe.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Kurt, one more quick thing about HBO, and then we have to take a break. They had announced not long ago, you know, the saga of Deadwood, how Deadwood ended on kind of a sour note. They thought there'd be at least one more season, and then there wasn't. And then they said, well, we'll probably do a couple of quick movies, hour and a half or two-hour movies. That never materialized. But then cast members from Deadwood, I'm friends with one of them, posted 3 or 4 months ago, hey, it looks like it's a go. We're going to get at least one more movie and maybe more. But then I didn't hear anything after
That's
that.
That's the last I heard, too.
Nothing beyond that.
Yeah.
All right. I want
Ask
more
your
Deadwood.
Friend.
Yeah,
yeah,
I would do that.
Well, yes,
yeah.
Who
friend?
Is your friend?
Earl Brown. W. Earl Brown, the guy who played Dan on Deadwood.
Huh.
He's a really good guy. He's from Chicago, and when I did the night show, I had him on pretty often, and we had him on in the daytime too. But he was all excited, saying, "Hey, finally, we've made progress. It looks like we're going to do at least a movie out of this." But then nothing happened after that.
I would think HBO would jump on that right now.
Yeah,
a familiar concept, you know, and it's a movie. Mm-hmm. I would think they would do it in a.
I didn't much get into
in
that.
A minute.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good. It's ruined. Like, I can't watch any other westerns now. It's that good. Because any other thing I watch, I go, boy, it's not Deadwood. It's just that solid. Yeah. You know, everything
too vulgar
about it,
for me.
Right. That has almost as much swearing in it as you, as spending a day with you.
Yeah, I just heard you when Fina Dillman was
running
down the street.
Oh, shut up. Got to take a break. Come on.
All right. We got to take a break. You're being censored, Kurt Wagner. A quick break and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, we are talking television and 312-981-7200 with Kurt Wagner, our Friday friend, tvshowpatrol.com. Someone has a question or comment for you about, I think, a new show. Joel, this is Kurt.
Hey, guys. I've watched the first couple of shows, episodes of Brain Dead, and my wife and I are still trying to figure out, is it a comedy? Is it a sci-fi thriller? Is it a drama, or is it a documentary explaining what's really going on in Washington?
Yeah, it's the documentary, I would say.
Is there any spoiler you shouldn't say, Kurt? I mean, do you want to give the backstory a little bit, just so we...
Yeah, I mean, it's from the Kings, who did The Good Wife, and it's a political satire. Basically, extraterrestrials are getting into politicians' brains, and there's a lot of bizarre behavior happening and exploding brains and goo.
I'm in.
And it's,
you had us at goo.
It's funny and pointed and all that kind of stuff.
Joel, do you like it or are you unsure?
I think I like it.
And so, you know, I think, Joel, it's sort of all those things that you said, sort of.
Comedy, drama, okay. Documentary, yeah. Everything. Yeah.
I mean, some people could, you know, I think maybe that's the King saying, this is what's wrong with Washington, D.C., you know.
Could be. And what network is this on?
It's on CBS.
On CBS, Brain Dead. All right, excellent. Sorry we weren't more definitive, Joel, but you were right.
You never are, so it's okay.
That's good. Thank you.
Use that as a promo, please.
Yep.
Thanks, easy. Joel. That should be a promo.
Game of Thrones got a lot of attention for their episode on Sunday, which fans of the show are saying is, if not the best episode of Game of Thrones of all time, certainly in the top two or three. Again, don't give anything away, but was it as great as all the hype?
Yes.
It was.
I thought so.
Yeah.
Kevin, I think.
Kevin finally saw
it.
He's had to stay away from the internet for the last 4 days for fear that somebody would blow what happened on the episode.
Oh, I guess I shouldn't have emailed
Don't
him
say
all
too
that
much.
Information.
Oh, did you? He's seen it now. But for anyone who hasn't, a lot went on Sunday, right?
Well, it was called, the title of the episode was The Battle of the Bastards.
Yeah.
And there were actually two huge battles in it. And it was just the cinematography. I mean, I think this pretty much will give Game of Thrones every single technical award at this year's Emmys.
Really? It's that good?
Yeah.
So in the Battle of the Bastards, was it one bastard fighting another bastard, or was it a bunch of bastards fighting other bastards?
It was the two bastards fighting. Well, and their armies.
Yeah.
Never saw it ever. Would it be okay just to watch this last episode?
Well, I think if you want to see a really cool battle scene, yeah, it would be.
Will I be lost if I just tune in on this one?
I think you'll get the idea.
Because that's what happens.
Here's another army, and they fight.
But that's what happens when these series get going. It's like sometimes you feel left out. So if you're so far behind, but
I mean, if you ever plan on watching it from the beginning, then I wouldn't. But if you don't think that you will, I would definitely say watch this, because you know how what was the army movie, the war movie, World War II movie, Steven Spielberg did that had that really cool D-Day invasion.
Saving Private Ryan?
Yeah. That had that really cool D-Day invasion.
Yeah, Saving
this
Private Ryan.
This totally rivals that.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Was it as violent as the last episodes of Kelly Ripa and Michael Strahan?
Way more violent.
Was it really? Yeah. I can't imagine.
Yes. But there weren't as many mind games.
Oh, good. Good. I like that.
And also,
more dragons.
Dragons.
Yeah, there's dragons.
For Kurt Wagner, texted in, I just finished both seasons of Bloodline. They are so great. I'm hoping that there will be a season 3. Do you know when that will happen?
Well, season 2 just came out not too long ago, so I would guess next year.
It'll take about a year on that.
It.
Yeah. There's a show called Penny Dreadful that's kind of a cult hit, not really mainstream Penny Dreadful, but at the last episode, they put the words "the end" at the end of the episode, which made people believe, uh-oh, we're out of show.
Well,
but it's not necessarily, right?
The season, this was the third season, and past season finales, they never had that, and they don't have it on every episode. So when it shows up on the end of this episode, it had people wondering. And, you know, somebody died, so it sort of made more sense for you to wonder. But I love the show. It was very creative, I thought. John Logan, who's from Chicago, award-winning
screenwriter. He's so good.
Created it, and I think directed a lot of the episodes, if not all of them. But he wrote the whole thing.
He's the guy who wrote Gladiator,
isn't
he?
Yeah. He did.
Hey, guys, can I interrupt you for just a second?
Sure, Kim,
we're seeing reports that the Lucas Museum has announced today they are no longer going to be in Chicago. They are pulling out of Chicago and building the museum in California.
Bad for us. Thank you, friends of the no one.
So, friends of the no one.
The Lucas Museum appears to be blaming the Friends of the Parks.
Well, who else is at fault? That's crazy.
So,
hope they're happy.
This is just developing, so stay tuned.
All right, thanks, Kim.
And we probably have time for one more question.
Well, yeah. I hope that parking lot is well used.
Right, so do I. That would be nice. Yeah, take another question.
All right, and we have to be quick here. Tim, you get the last question for Kurt Wagner today.
Okay, of the 2,000 channels that I get on my cable, on Saturday nights, you could always go to Sci-Fi and get a premiere movie. Or even Cinemax doesn't even show premiere movies anymore on Saturday. Is there a reason why Sci-Fi's, did it run out of crocodiles or what?
Well, you know, coming up is Sharknado 4.
Oh, when does that come out?
That's in a month or two,
yeah,
right?
Oh, it's in July at some point.
Best summer ever.
So you have that to look forward to.
But
you know,
a regular basis, you'd think one of those networks would plug a movie in.
Well, Sci-Fi usually does their
classics,
their bizarro movies, you know, like
Tim, why aren't you watching Svengoolie?
Like
why aren't you watching Svengoolie? So what? It's Svengoolie.
I know.
But Cinemax, I thought they always had movies on.
Yeah, your movie channels do.
On Saturday night.
Oh, okay.
Hardly ever.
Well, why don't you record something from another night and watch it on Saturday? Tim, I can help
you. I'll watch it again.
Thank you for calling. Have a great weekend. All right, we should wrap up. Is there anything we need to touch on?
There's something big premiering this weekend. I can't remember what show it is, but we were talking about it earlier.
Roadies?
It's Roadies, right.
On Showtime. So this can replace, this can sort of give your vinyl fix. I think it's a funny comedy. I liked it.
It's obviously roadies.
It's an hour-long comedy from Cameron Crowe.
Yeah.
And it's about this group of roadies who travel around to set up for this band and everything. And it sort of gives that culture, exposes that culture to everyone. Because I think that's something that nobody really thinks about when they go to a concert is, you know,
the setup.
Who set this up and everything. But there's a lot of really funny things in that. And later today, you can go to the site and read a couple interviews.
That's Roadies on Showtime.
Yeah.
Kurt, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Kurt Wagner's website is tvshowpatrol.com. Visit it. You will enjoy yourselves. Have a good weekend. Take a quick break, and then we'll get some news from Kim, including the sad news that the Lucas Museum is not going to be in Chicago, but in California instead. More details next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. For those of you new to the show, what we do is we do 2 hours of the show from 10 to noon. We're off for an hour, and Steve Bertrand comes in and does the Wintrust Business Lunch, and then we come back, and we do 2 more hours now until 3 o'clock.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to you. Did you get a chance to speak with your husband today? Because, as you mentioned, he will be
inconsolable
over the news of the Lucas Museum not being here in Chicago.
He is inconsolable, and he's hard at work. He works out of our home office in Buffalo, New York. I don't know.
You have a home office in Buffalo,
sure.
New York? Do you?
So I called and I said, I am so sorry. He goes, what'd you do? I said, you haven't heard?
Did he not know the news?
He's working. So he didn't know. I said, it looks like George Lucas is taking his museum back to California.
And he said, what word did he utter, scream?
He said, I knew it. The Friends of the Parks are scumbags.
Did he say that?
Yeah. I do find it strange that they've, first of all, been able to keep this in limbo for 2 years. Congratulations to them for a job well done on their part.
Postponing until evidently, and everybody said this, I'm not the first to say this, if you're George Lucas, you go, I can't just keep waiting and waiting and waiting. So just by the fact that they kept it, they kept the ball up in the air, that's what it was. It was 2 years of indecision, and we lost it.
And I can't believe George Lucas was as and Melody Hobson was as patient.
Yeah, they were very patient.
Because really, I would have said, I'm out of here.
Right.
Well, I guess that's what they've said, and Jim was truly inconsolable.
Yeah.
He was the first person I thought of.
Yeah.
You're about the 10th person that came up to me and said, how's Jimmy Mack?
Well, I just figured, I mean, it was a natural job for him. Like, it was the perfect place for him. It was almost like they just planted it there specifically for him.
Maybe the Field Museum will give you the security guard position. I don't know. They'll give you a flashlight.
That's something.
I mean, he needed feather dust too, right?
But it's absurd to me.
It's really sad.
I just don't understand it. I don't understand how a small group can make up the mind. And I know there are a lot of people that are against it, but
are there a lot of people who are against it? I know that there's a faction of people, and the friends, even among the Friends of the Zoo, we've heard leaking stories. Friends of the Park.
The Friends of the Zoo is a different thing.
Friends of the Zoo. Friends of the Park, even among them, certain people were willing to make some sort of amends.
Absolutely.
You know what? Why don't we do it this way? But others were not so hospitable.
There was a total disagreement within the members of Friends of the Parks.
Yeah.
And I can't believe that such a small interest group can ruin it for, I would say, the majority. I can't even say majority. Every time we've talked about it, we'd get a lot of people texting, oh, shut up, Wendy, you're a suburbanite. What do you care? Mm. But I don't know. Usually when people complain, that's the person who contacts you. Like, no one would say, oh, kudos to you. Great work. Keep it going. I want the museum.
Right.
So I don't know what the consensus is, but I would say the majority of the people thought it was a good idea.
It seemed, not just from a standpoint of, and we've discussed this before, the main thing is it would have certainly brought in tourism, and that equals revenue, and that would have been a good thing.
And the
and I
city
know aesthetically,
doesn't even have a budget.
Right.
Wouldn't that have helped a little bit?
Boy,
and jobs?
I wonder if it would have.
Look at the jobs.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, it's pretty upsetting, because I really thought, the week that you were gone for a couple of days, and the word came out that the Friends of the Park were willing to put some of the differences aside. And it looked like at that point, and that was just a week and a half ago.
It said it dropped the lawsuit.
Yeah.
Blocking the building of the George Lucas Museum. Because Kevin, thank you. When I was out at Disney, you texted a little, looks like they might be dropping the lawsuit. So I stayed on top of that.
Yeah.
And then very soon thereafter, they said, we never said that. But see, now that's what shows you there's a leak in the Friends of the Parks because some of the people within the office said, I don't want to be a part of preventing this.
Right.
So how does it come to a conclusion? Why didn't it go to court? And you know what? George Lucas, Melody Hobson, you were way more patient than I would have been.
Yeah, they really were. That's a long time. How about this for you? In 1 week, you had to tell your husband, Jimmy, that Chicago is not getting the Lucas Museum. And you also had to tell Corey Feldman that Tom Snyder had died.
What's up with that?
That was a weird moment. I don't know. For people who didn't hear it, we had Corey Feldman on the other day.
And you can check out the podcast at WGNradio.com.
And because you have you share the same last name, Snyder, as Tom Snyder, the great talk show host from The Tomorrow Show on NBC.
He was awesome.
Love him. Absolutely loved him.
And I love Dan Aykroyd's hysterical impression.
But even if you put the impression aside, for almost everybody I know who's in broadcasting, if they're citing their examples of who they admired, Tom Snyder's name always, always, always comes up.
Best interviewer, honestly.
He really was. He was so good. So at the end of the interview with Corey Feldman, he thinks, because you have the last name as Tom Snyder, that you might be related. Hey, say hello. If you talk to Tom Snyder, say hello to him.
And you and I just looked at each other like, who's going to tell him?
You told him, and
I said, I think he passed away.
Yep.
What?
You didn't even want to say, because you knew he died. You knew Tom Snyder died.
Yeah.
But you wanted to let Corey Feldman off easily. I commend you for that. So you said, I think he might have died, which leaves it open-ended. Like, there's a chance he's still out there. But, yeah, you had to give Corey Feldman the sad news about Tom Snyder, who died years ago.
Yeah.
And then Jimmy, the news about the Star Wars Museum.
Well, the good news is I now have a nickname.
What is that nickname?
The Deal Breaker.
The Deal Breaker. Right. Well, it comes down to that phrase that we've heard a million times in our lives, don't shoot me, I'm only the messenger.
Right.
But you always, when somebody gives you bad news, you always remember the person who gave you that bad news, and that'll be you for a lot of people now.
I've ruined Corey Feldman's life. Isn't it don't shoot the messenger, don't shoot me, I'm the piano player as an Elton John
yeah,
record.
Yeah, it is. It is. Right.
I think people want to talk about this, and I'm just curious, because really, if you did a poll, I feel like the residents of Chicago should have had some voice in this, as opposed to just the friends of the park who are no friends of mine.
Couldn't that issue have been on a ballot? Like, whenever there's a major election, couldn't you put, because that's a major thing, couldn't we have said, hey, we'll base this, friends of the park, we understand your concerns,
and we'll work with you, but let's just check out the interest.
Let's see if the majority wants it or doesn't want it. That seems fair.
Let's do a quick Insta-poll after this break.
All right.
312-981-7200. Because I guess I might be speaking correctly when I say the majority of people would want the museum. How do you turn down a museum? That's all I'm saying.
Right, right.
So 312-981-7200, for or against, let's do our little mini-poll.
We'll find it out. Give us a call or a text. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. For your husband, Jim, getting the news that the Star Wars Museum wasn't here is kind of like the way we all felt when the Blackhawks were eliminated by the St. Louis Blues, or the Cubs were eliminated by the New York Mets, or James Shields pitches for the White Sox. You just feel like, oh, what might have been, and then it doesn't happen, and we feel bad.
It's just that it's a museum. Judy Pilak is in the studio, and we're going to talk to you. You're going to have a full report, but just a bottom line sentence is Lucas said enough, and he's out of here.
Right. You know who's really upset?
Mayor
Emanuel.
He was pulling out all the stops. He wanted it.
Absolutely, yep.
Don't
yep.
you feel sometimes that this all happened because of Mayor Rahm Emanuel, that Friends of the Parks were trying to get him as opposed to the rest of us?
Maybe, but you know what? A lot of us look at it as a power play on many fronts. Number one, the lakefront. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Friends of the Parks really digging in. Lucas, I mean, he could have gone, he could have had some other spots around the city. He kind of dug in a little bit. He wanted that lakefront.
But it's a museum campus.
I know. I personally.
And a parking lot.
And a parking lot. It was that, thank God, the parking lot has been saved.
Well, why aren't they called Friends of the Parking Lot?
Yeah, I know. It's, you know, it's a whole lakefront thing. And I mean, they're strictly sticking to the whole Burnham, you know.
Which we found out from a guy, was it Michael Whitwer, who was in here, who helped with the Buckingham Fountain renovation and everything, and said that technically that really wasn't in the Burnham thing.
Proclamation, that's what I was trying to come up with, that word. Yeah, that the city's lakefront shall remain forever open, clear, and free. And they took that as nothing really short of gospel. I mean,
oh, yeah.
They stuck to that. So, I mean, there were a lot of groups with their power plays, and no one wanted to budge. And that's what, and the mayor, though, trying to go among everyone and get it done. Yeah, so.
312-981-7200. We're going to do a little mini poll here. You know who I blame?
Who do you blame?
Donald Trump. Because remember when he came in and got Trump Tower built, and we're all like, how could that happen? We have changed ways since that. I know it's not on the lakefront, but it's like he seemed to slip in and get that building up awfully quickly.
There have been, I mean, if you look at what happened with Meg's Field, we have a way of getting things done in the middle of the night when no one's looking.
X marks the spot.
I wonder if they had just put the Lucas Museum up in the middle of the night and it was just there the next day.
There it is. Exactly.
At least a kiosk to get it started.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, so there might be some truth to what Wendy says, that it may have been a little bit of a backlash against.
Oh, maybe.
You know, it seems to be a lot of backlash around the world these days. So,
but how does a little public interest group get to, like, change the lives of the whole city and make people wait for 2 years? I find that astounding.
Right. Well, because a federal judge agreed with them, and that's all they needed. And you're right. They just held it up for two. So I guess to the day. 2 years to the day.
Is it 2 years exactly?
2 years
yeah.
to the day
they
that
probably
they announced
waited.
That they would come here.
So did that play into Lucas's decision today to say, all right, then we're going somewhere else? It's been 2 years.
It sounds a little bit Hollywood. I don't think
No?
Yeah, I think so.
Would you have waited 2 years if you were? I would have said, I'll give you a couple months to get your crap together or else I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know. And I guess it depends where you fall on this, but maybe Friends of the Parks
are no friends of
mine.
Yeah,
they're enemies today. A lot of people are looking at them as enemies. But, you know, a lot of people didn't want it either.
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out, because I don't know where you draw the line. Like, was the majority of the people for it. Dale, what do you think?
Hello. Hi, Dale.
Fine.
First of all, I'd like to say I love your guys' show. You guys are great.
Thank you, Dale.
And with this thing, not a Friends of the Park, you know, a good way to get back at them, Mary Emanuel files a lawsuit against them for lost revenue.
That's interesting. Is that possible, Judy, do you think?
I don't think so. It's a good idea, though.
If history has taught us anything, it's taught us that we can sue anybody for anything.
True.
So, you know, okay, you get back at them on that. And even if it doesn't, it gives them a lot of hassle. Okay, and then if they ever need any renovation work done on the parking lot or anything like that, you know, hey, I'm sorry, you can't have a permit to do that. I'm sorry. If not, we'll tell you in about 2 years if you can do it or not.
Dale, I like the way you think. Don't get mad, get even. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, Friends isn't really an entity that builds things. I mean, right. They're there to stop things from being
right.
built. They're there to protect the lakefront.
Does Friends of the Park have a headquarters where we could fly a TIE fighter through the trenches and there's a vulnerable spot where if we hit it just right, it would explode? Would that happen?
Is that a Star Wars thing? Because
I never thought of it, but maybe.
Noise. Yeah, okay.
Possibly.
Yeah, possibly.
Mary, you're disappointed, aren't you?
Oh, am I ever. I want to cry, Wendy. I feel bad. I'm going to tell you why. I have relatives in Texas and California that come here with their children, and where do they like to go? To the museums. I just feel terrible. Why didn't they take a vote on it to see what the people wanted? Why did the park district have to make the decision? I'm just so mad right now, Wendy.
Just to be clear, it wasn't the park district. They were for it.
It was the Friends of the Parks.
This is a small public interest group. Yes, it's a small group. And the fact is they went to court and they got, you know, they got a judge to grant them their...
The judge is probably a Star Trek fan. That's what it is.
Do you think that's it?
Yes. Hmm. Mary, so disappointing. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you, hon. Love you. And Wendy, I love you and Bill.
Oh, you're very nice.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Sorry, Judy, she doesn't like you.
She likes you, Judy.
She doesn't know me well enough yet.
Afraid to commit.
You know, and this is kind of a little reminiscent, like, with the Olympics.
It is similar.
It is.
You know, it's,
where you go, well, this is almost a done deal.
Exactly,
how can you blow
perfect.
This?
How can you not want to come here? And they laid it out to me so perfectly, their plans, everything. Yeah. And yeah.
This was not laid out perfectly, though. And I feel that George Lucas could have explained better what this would have entailed. Because a lot of people hear Star Wars, they're thinking there's going to be people dressed in costumes hanging out at a Star Wars museum.
Yeah.
It was so much beyond that.
It was all sorts of art.
Right. It was his art collection. It wasn't just Star Wars. Exactly.
Right.
But there are those who say he did come here because he thought that he could ram it through a little bit quicker with all the politics of the city.
Yeah.
All right. Having Rahm Emanuel in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk to Laura now,
On his
too.
Side, you mean. Did you say in his pocket? I think you meant on his side, right?
Right.
Maybe it came out sounding strangely.
Right. Yeah, no, I didn't say that.
No.
All right, Laura, for or against it?
I am against it.
How come?
I think that it should go to California, which is a fantasy land state, Hollywood and all that, those types out there. And in addition to that, 200 years, 100 years from now, the Shedd Aquarium, the Adler Planetarium, the Field Museum, the Museum of Science and Industry will still be standing and will be of interest. And where will the people be who would be interested in a museum based on a movie?
See, that's the misconception right there, Laura. It's not based on the movie. It's based on film. It's hieroglyphs and all how film started and narrative arts where Native Americans would tell stories. That's why it wasn't sold properly.
Well, I can see your point in that it wasn't sold properly, if that's the case. But I still think that the Friends of the Park had a valid reason for keeping those spaces open. I mean, there was an agreement with Burnham years ago, and at least they may be a small minority that want to keep it open, but at least they're fighting for the people that agree with them.
Which might be the minority. That's the thing that's hard to figure out. But, Laura, we totally appreciate your call, and thank you so much for listening.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
We have to take a break. Judy Pilek has the full story on what has happened since about noon when Kim first announced the plans that it was dead in the water. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. If you're online, hang on. 312-981-7200. It's WGN. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and Judy Pilek in the studio. Why don't you give us a rundown of the story of the George Lucas Museum?
This just in, Wendy, a couple hours ago. So the Lucas Museum is dropping its plans to build in Chicago. Star Wars creator George Lucas pretty much pointing the finger at Friends of the Parks. He said, no one benefits from continuing the park's seemingly unending litigation to protect a parking lot. Of course, Friends of the Parks protects open spaces. Now, it was a parking lot where they wanted to build the Lucas Museum. This has been going on for 2 years to the day that they announced that they wanted Chicago as the site. Lucas and his wife, Melody Hobson, who's from Chicago. So they thanked the governor. They thanked the mayor for all their efforts. But they pretty much said they were done because they...
And can you
blame
them?
It was a battle that wouldn't end.
2 years, and it was nowhere near ending. Now, in the past week, we had heard some grumblings from both sides, you know, and really the mayor kind of was ramping up his rhetoric on, we have got to get this done.
Yeah.
So he may have known that Lucas was on the verge of saying, you know, we're through, because just a few days ago, he was saying, come on, we've got to get this done. This is, a $1.5 billion revenue maker that we're going to lose, all those jobs. And as it turns out,
so he forced it to go. He was trying to force it to go to court to get a decision made, but it never made it to the courts.
Well, what he was really doing is asking the Friends of the Parks to, let's sit down, let's talk, let's come up with a solution here. Parks, at one point, the Friends of the Parks said that they were being told this was an ultimatum. Either you step up and do it or it's done. And then the city came out right away, right after that, and said, that is not true. We did not give them an ultimatum. But we are telling you that this project looks like it could be on its way out. So let's try to get something done here.
Do we know, Judy, if during all this, if other cities were still in contact with George Lucas?
Oh,
it looks
I'm
like
sure
it's going to be
were.
In or around San Francisco. So they were saying,
well,
we know you're having trouble over there.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure they
will do everything we can.
But didn't
to make
San Francisco
this?
Not want it at first?
Because I'm hearing now L.A. is, the mayor of L.A. is ecstatic today upon hearing this news. So
it's going to L.A.?
Maybe.
That he's at least in the running.
It's definitely, it's going to California. I think that's what we know for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we were curious as, I felt like the majority of the people wanted it, but there'd be people who say, no, I'm totally against it. We had one caller who is very upset that it's not happening. And now let's talk to Kevin. Kevin, you didn't want it, did you?
Well, I think one of the best assets of the city is that open land between Lakeshore Drive and all the buildings on Michigan Avenue. And if they plop that thing down, what's to make them say that they can't be putting everything until that whole land's obliterated?
But see, that's the whole thing, is it was going to remain within the museum campus. It's not like you would be dotting it up and down Lakeshore Drive on the S-curve and all that stuff. That is still wide open and beautiful. And there was going to be a park in this, too. That's what's so ironic about it. They were going to take a parking lot and make this lovely green area and a museum for all to enjoy.
Well, we've already got that eyesore, that Thieves' Wife's Park that's plopped down by Millennium Park. You know, it's just, you got to take advantage of the land or else it's going to be gone.
And that's the only reason you were against it.
Right. You know, it's a beautiful idea for a museum. There's plenty of places to put it. Now, if it goes to L.A., where's the lakefront or oceanfront property they're going to be able to plop that down? It's going to be in the middle of a city somewhere, and we could have found room for it somewhere here.
That's your opinion, and we thank you for sharing it, Kevin. Thank you.
I know it's not yours. But
No. But it's okay. I just, they are going to plop it in the middle of the city because there aren't buildings on the shoreline in Los Angeles. But we have museums right in one particular area on the museum campus. So it's not like it was just going to be put somewhere willy nilly.
Well, they were going to. How many billion dollars were they going to spend to renovate Old McCormick Place for it? It just seems like it's a, a big black hole of cash that's just going to go in all the politicians' pockets.
Just to be fair, George Lucas was footing the bill for that museum, if it was at the original site on the parking lot. But yes, when it was, when they had talked about McCormick Place, it was going to be a lot more money, and the state was going to try to help them out with some state
to
funds.
To demolish it.
Right, and all that. But, I mean, that was just, that was a secondary one. But, I mean, the original plan to put it there in the museum campus was going to not spend one taxpayer dollar.
And bring in tons of revenue.
So they say.
All I know is the laugh of the day is when you said the state was going to help pay for it. But I'll let you guys go get somebody else on there.
Well, after they got a budget, of course.
Right, after a budget.
Kevin, we really appreciate it.
All right. And the willy-nilly you referred to was in Empire Strikes Back, wasn't he? Was he one of the? He was a bounty hunter. Friend of Bosk's and IG-88's.
He was really good.
Yes.
Hi, Joan. You were against it as well.
I don't know. But the reason why I called is if you watch Channel 11 and you watch Jeffrey Bear's show about Chicago and its history, the late Montgomery Ward fought fearlessly to keep the lakefront clear, clean, and open, and no buildings or industry along the lakefront. Now, as to the campus, the museum campus, I don't know how that got approved. But the point is, the Friends of the Park, I think they're following along with what Montgomery Ward was doing. And he died before it was finally finalized that it was supposed to stay clear. And he even said he doubted that people appreciated all that he fought for them.
And he put up that fight because he didn't want someone to profit. They didn't want it to be, I don't know who Montgomery Ward's big competitor was at the time.
Penny's, Sears, Marshall Fields.
Probably Sears, so they didn't want someone who's going to make a profit on the lakefront is the reason Montgomery Ward did that, because if they couldn't do it, he didn't want anyone else to do it. But this would have, you know, been a museum.
No, I didn't know that because I don't recall Jeffrey Bear ever saying what you're telling me now.
Well, you call him and tell him to call us, Joan.
No, I can't. I don't have a computer. I have no way of reaching him, so... maybe you could call him and talk to him about it.
Not a bad idea. We thank you so much.
And I enjoy your show very much.
That's nice of you, Joan. Thank you.
Thank you. Craig has a question or a comment. Hi, Craig.
Good afternoon. First of all, how long has Friends of the Park been around?
That's a great question.
Don't know the
it's
answer to
been
that.
It's been quite a while, I think. I will look it up as you're talking.
So when was McCormick Place built, and how was that allowed to have been built?
Great question.
McCormick Place was built initially in the 60s, right?
Yeah, I think it precedes Friends of the Parks.
It would almost have to.
Well, why did they agree to that?
They weren't around then.
Yeah, they couldn't. Yeah, the group itself did not exist, so there was no opposition, I guess.
And, you know, it is interesting, that section of the lakefront there, you know, there's a lot of stuff on there. There's McCormick Place. There are the museums. There's Soldier Field.
1975 was Friends of the Park's inception.
Okay.
1975, did you say?
That's what Kevin says.
Oh, okay.
And when was McCormick Place built?
In the 60s. The first part of McCormick Place. Then they did an annex. They added more to it.
And I saw that that was brought up, too, as a possible site recently, and they would agree to that. Originally, they said, no, we're not going to agree to anything. But I had read somewhere that the Friends of the Park said, okay, we'll do that. You can do it there. But then part of the proceeds have to go fund parks.
They had some demands.
So what happened with that? Lucas said no to that?
I don't believe the city was willing to. The city felt like that was extortion, and they probably
weren't willing. It does seem... a little weird.
Well, and it was on both sides. I mean, the city was making some demands, too.
Absolutely.
You know, either do it or they're going to leave, or we need you to do this, this, and this. And so, yeah, I mean, it seemed to almost get to the point of in a negotiation where all hell's going to break loose, and it did, and then everything shuts down.
Yeah.
All right, shall we take a break and continue some calls?
Yeah, more of your calls, more of your thoughts, 312-981-7200. We got the news earlier today. That thanks to the Friends of the Park, primarily.
They are not friends of mine,
they're
Bill.
Not friends of yours, Wendy, but they are of the parks. The Lucas Museum will be going elsewhere. What do you think of it? 312-981-7200. It's us, Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Later in the show, hunky actor Robert Forster, who Wendy has a crush on, will be with us. That's at 2:35. But right now, we're talking about the museum that got away, the George Lucas Museum. We thought we had it. We didn't close our glove, and the ball fell out.
It's really sad.
It is very sad.
Hi, Rick.
Hello?
Hello, Rick.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
I just wanted to reiterate what some of these people were saying. You know, you read that book, The Devil in the White City, you see the extraordinary efforts Burnham, Montgomery Ward made to keep our lakefront clean and clear. I'm sorry, the George Lucas Museum is not on a par with the Museum of Science and Industry, the Field Museum, the aquarium, any of that stuff. It's just not on a par with that.
Do you mean visually or by means of importance to the culture? How do you mean not on par?
Yes, the cultural thing. It's just not on a par. It just doesn't even compare.
Well, but again, if the focus of Lucas's museum wasn't strictly Star Wars, it was art and the history of storytelling, that's pretty important, wouldn't you agree?
I would. It just doesn't have the importance of the Chicago museums that we have down there, you know? It just doesn't seem right to me to take that kind of land and put it with those other icons.
That's your opinion, and it's understandable. I know that Chicago is becoming more involved in TV and movie production, and I just think that would be another asset and another great reason to have the museum here. And let's make Chicago more of a powerhouse for the movie industry.
Well, I would agree with that. I just disagree with the location. Our lakefront has been around for a long time, and we've done so much to beautify it. I guess I just don't see it.
Absolutely understand. Rick, thank you so
thanks,
much for
Rick.
Calling.
All right, thanks for taking my call. Bye.
Absolutely. Todd, you're for the museum.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. And the whole thing is, it's funny how people keep bringing up Burnham. It was, as they said before, it was really Montgomery Ward that fought for the site. And the Field Museum was actually Illinois Central Railroad property that they ultimately ended up putting the museum at because the parks didn't control it. They think if you listen to Jeffrey Bear, they were going to put the museum initially at the spot where Buckingham Fountain currently is located. And I think if you read the whole thing about what they were trying to do, I think it would be a great addition to the city, and it's a shame that they couldn't find a spot for it.
Burnham, if what I read years ago is correct, help me with my history on this, is he was one of the city planners who kind of figured out where, for the most part, the city would be laid out, right? Like what would go where? That was partially Daniel Burnham.
He had a big plan to lay out the city, but it really wasn't, it didn't come to fruition. He had a whole big, it was almost like how Paris is laid out with the different large boulevards and all that. It just was a little portion of what he actually planned ever was developed. The big thing was keeping it open, and he never would have been able to do that on his own as Montgomery Ward. And actually, they got into altercations between it because he wanted to have something on the lakefront, Burnham, and Montgomery Ward was against it. So they were at odds.
They were at each other's throats over that.
Can I share something with you guys that I found online? And this is from an Illinois Case Files. Montgomery Ward in 1887 with his partner George A. Thorne purchased property on the west side of Michigan Avenue facing Lake Michigan from which to operate their burgeoning mail order business. They paid a premium for that land because it allowed them to construct a building favored with sunlight, fresh breezes, and lake views over the public land to the east. Now, Ward became upset, or so the story goes, when he observed workers building scaffolding in the park to load garbage into the railroad cars for transport out of the city, which you mentioned, Todd, that was a railway area. Mm-hmm. Ward sued, claiming that this activity violated language on a map of the original subdivision where his property was located, which stipulated that the space east of Michigan Avenue would be public ground forever to remain vacant of buildings. So he did not like seeing the garbage going on, and so he said, we should keep this free and clear for other people. So that's an interesting little thing, too.
Yeah, it's interesting because he was so vilified during that time period while he was fighting to keep it open by the press and by the public, which is interesting as well. So the friends of the parks are being vilified, but I still think it needs to. I'm so for the museum.
I'm sad to see it go. It would have really been good for the city. And unlike the Olympics, that was something that would have been built. And as we've seen from all these previous Olympic cities, they kind of just are run down and left and not used. This is something that would be used forever. It's a museum, unlike an arena or something that was built temporarily.
That's true. I agree with you, Wendy.
Todd,
doesn't mean much, Todd. You and me are going to cry together in our beers. You too.
Yeah, there you go.
I do have to admit that one of the things that makes this city so amazing is when you drive down Lakeshore Drive, or if you're taking a bicycle, or if you're on the beaches, our view is spectacular, and a lot of cities would have ruined that. A lot of cities would have found a way. That is as prime a real estate as you could possibly get in the Midwest. They could have built a wall of buildings all along the lake, and luckily that didn't happen. So that's the good news.
Yeah.
But in a case like this, is we've tried to make the point where it's a museum campus set up specifically for those museums. I know you could say, yeah, but astronomy is much more important, or dinosaurs are much more important than storytelling. I guess you could make that argument. But still, in an area that's built, set up specifically for the museums of the city, it's very hard to tell one museum, well, you're not quite up to snuff with the rest of our museums.
And without storytelling, we would have never known about these other things to study them and learn more about them. It's like, that's the first story was what got everything started.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a shame, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Is it a travesty? Would you call it a travesty? It's not a travesty, but it is a shame.
I just, you know, again, just a small special interest group. I'm surprised that they had the power to really take care of the whole, take control of the whole thing.
Well,
Steve?
You know, what's interesting as well is they didn't agree within the group. I mean, they're clearly...
Right, I mentioned that.
Oh, yeah, did you? I'm sorry. Throughout
that
this,
disagreed.
Right, there was one side saying this was going to happen and another say this was going to happen.
And that's when that leak came out last week that said that they were going to drop their lawsuit because they were at odds within the organization.
Yeah.
So, what, a unanimous vote? I don't think so.
No, it didn't seem to be. So a very upsetting turn of events for us here in the city, as if you're just tuning in, as we find out today that the Lucas Museum will be going elsewhere, more than likely to California. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then a lot more ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you so much, Steve. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN, and if you'd like to talk to us, we would love to hear from you. We're 312-981-7200. You can call us or text us or send us a Ouija board message.
I wasn't allowed to play with that. We had one, but my dad really...
The Ouija board?
Yeah, kind of.
Why were you not allowed to play?
Evil spirits?
Oh,
were
there's
you
evil
crazy?
Spirits. There's evil spirits. But some would say that the Ouija board was fake. Some would. That it's not actually spirits pushing the little... letter selector around. Some would say that, and I'd be one of them. Did you see the video? Now, this is out of New Jersey, Oak Ridge, New Jersey, which is kind of your typical American suburb. It looks like if you close your eyes and I say, think about the suburbs, you would imagine a town much like this, the way the houses are laid out, the way the backyards are laid out.
Front lawns.
Yeah.
Quiet streets, trees.
Yeah, there's a lot of plant life. There's a lot of vegetation. There's a lot of trees and bushes and shrubs and stuff. And then there's also a giant bear walking around. A giant
bear. Is
this
someone's pet?
No. And it looks like when you see the videos of this, they first discovered this bear a couple of months ago. And then it became what they call an internet sensation. The videos became an internet sensation, Wendy. And now a guy named Joey Esposito on Monday followed the bear as the bear just kind of walked around in people's yards. And when you see the video, you go, well, that's not a bear because he's walking upright, which a bear like would normally not do. They'd be crawling around, but this bear is more comfortable walking like a guy. So you go, well, that's obviously a man dressed up like a bear walking around town, but it's not. It's a bear.
God, I wonder if people like went up to it going, hey, how's it going, buddy? Nice costume.
You'd be tempted to. You look just like a bear. Are you a bear? Smarter than the average bear. The elusive New Jersey bear that became an internet sensation, told you, after video emerged of him walking upright, has made an encore appearance on social media. Oak Ridge resident Joey Esposito, how you doing, was taking a water break from mowing his neighbor's front yard. See, I told you, typical suburb. on Monday afternoon when he saw the bear through his kitchen window. Who is on her property? Joey Esposito asked himself. He then realized that's the bear. Esposito then ran to grab his phone and started to record it. He's got minutes and minutes. Like, he follows, and this is it. I don't know Joey Esposito. Seems like either a very brave man or a very stupid man, because he's just a couple of yards away just walking around with his phone as the bear just...
I would never do that.
No. At that point... Oh, I'm sorry. Esposito grabbed his phone and started to record. At that point, Petals... That's the bear's name, Wendy. Petals... had moseyed to the neighbor's backyard and then nonchalantly walked toward him. That's Joey Esposito. He walked towards Joey. A Facebook group called Petals, the Injured Bipedal Bear, or the, Friends of the Bear, if this happened in Chicago.
The Injured what?
Petals, the Injured Bipedal Bear.
Bipedal?
That's two, like, two-legged. Walking on two legs. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
thought he was missing two other legs. Well, I guess those would be his hands.
His
Silly
hands are
me.
Paws, but he opts. You know how bears are given the decision. You can crawl around like a bear, or you can walk around.
Usually you walk around when the circus people put pants or a skirt on
right.
you.
That's when you want to walk around, because you're showing off at that point. Look, I'm like a guy, but I'm a bear. A Facebook group called Petals, the Injured Bipedal Bear, keeps its more than 11,000 subscribers updated on Petals' condition. The five-minute video, and I watched all 5 minutes because I thought it was going to end in disaster.
That's why you watched.
I'm telling you, like, you're going, well, at some point, somebody's going to come out on their lawn or on their patio and go, hey, sir, dressed as a bear, what are you doing on my property? And then he would unscrew that guy's head. But that did not happen, thankfully. The five-minute video that Esposito posted to the page has now garnered more than 116,000 views. That's not a lot. A woman put on a Chewbacca mask. She got 4 billion hits. He's only at 116,000. The video shows the bear, which is missing his front right paw and his left front paw. I didn't know that.
So that's why it's bipedal.
Yeah, because it's probably painful for him
to crawl
around.
That's why it's walking on
rear
legs.
I had no idea. The bear is walking briskly on its hind legs.
It's in a hurry.
Of course it is. It looks like, to this bear, like it's been doing this forever, because he's very comfortable. He walks very upright, like I have things to do. Gives that kind of attitude out. Walking briskly on its hind legs with ease as he explores the neighborhood. And that's exactly right. You see him. Kevin, we can post this video, right? We'll post this on our Facebook page. At one point, he stands on all fours like a normal bear, and he grazes on some grass. Esposito said that despite Petals' injuries, the bear seems pretty healthy. I would concur. Calling his encounter really funny, but also scary at first.
Yeah, but it's injured.
It doesn't seem there's no sign of that. Like, I didn't even know there were problems with the paws. It just looks like he's a neighbor walking around, just seeing what's what. Is everything in its place? Do you need your garden? Do you need your garden watered? Because I'm here for you. I'll help you out.
Boy, Anthony sure has a hairy back.
Right.
Just put a tank top on that bear. Wouldn't it be funny?
Anthony, actually, there's a picture of Anthony, has more hair than the bear. Isn't that scary? He seemed like he wasn't going to harm anyone, Esposito said, and I didn't want to get too close, but he actually looked pretty good, since Anthony Esposito. Esposito's 11-year-old daughter, who was in school at the time, didn't believe what he recorded. I'd be exactly that way.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a bear walking around our block.
What'd you do, Dad?
Followed him around with a camera.
Who was in the suit, Dad? That's
right.
Not really a bear. You
right.
wouldn't believe him. I can see
right.
that.
She thought, as we said, it was someone in a bear costume. Petals became a social media sensation back in 2014 after the first video of him and his human-like walk appeared on Facebook, although a GoFundMe page set a goal of $15,000 for the bear to be transferred to the Orphaned Wildlife Center in Otisville, New York. They ended up raising $22,000.
And who kept the money? Come on. The bear didn't make the GoFundMe page.
Right. Right. The New Jersey Department of Fish and Wildlife did not approve of the relocation because it felt that the bear didn't need assistance. He could make it on his own.
Not in the middle of a neighborhood.
When you see the video, it doesn't seem like anything's wrong with him. He's just looking, like, going from yard to yard. What do these guys have in their yard? Let's take a look. Oh, nothing special. Let's see what's over there.
Why wasn't there a tricycle in the front yard?
Right.
Seriously. Or an umbrella.
A tutu for him to throw on and dance. I don't know.
Give it a watch. I'm going to give it a looky-loo. It's on our Facebook page right now.
Yeah.
There's another video that I saw on Facebook, and I worked at Brookfield Zoo for many years when I was in high school and out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a video going around that the Chicago Natural History Museum put together, and it's a video of opening day at Brookfield Zoo in 1934.
Wow.
And the reason I think of this is because the bears are just sitting there begging and people are whipping marshmallows at the bears. And I totally remember as a little girl, since we grew up in Brookfield, we went to the zoo all the time, almost every weekend.
Right.
I totally remember feeding the animals.
You could feed. There was no restriction on feeding animals at the zoo back then.
They were just little beggars. They would be just sitting back and standing on their hind legs and just begging for food, and you would throw marshmallows or peanuts. I totally remember that. I wonder if anyone else does.
Wow.
I'll show you the video. We can put that up as well. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Wendy, I just rewatched this video of this bear walking around a town in New Jersey, and there's a scene that maybe I didn't see this yesterday, or maybe I forgot it, but he goes up to a Redbox machine and he returns a copy of The Revenant. It's amazing to watch this bear. I don't know how he even paid for it.
The Revenant?
Yeah.
It would have been funny if you didn't say The Remnant.
I always call it The Remnant.
Do you?
Yeah.
He's returning a used carpet piece?
Yeah, just a small piece of carpet.
He had a DVD of the outtakes.
Right.
And was he on his way to Showbiz Pizza Place? Was
that a kid can be a kid.
Is that where the bear used to play
the xylophone or something?
Yeah.
I don't remember. All right, so you just said that back when Brookfield Zoo opened, you could feed the animals. You could attend the zoo and throw marshmallows at bears.
Well, 1934 is the first day that Brookfield Zoo opened. It's the third largest zoo in all the land in North America. Maybe the world. I don't remember my script on the motor safari or railroad train. But, of course, I wasn't there in 1934. I wasn't born yet.
Right. Close.
Not even.
Not even close.
But I remember feeding the bears, and there's video. We can post that on our page, too. It's just a black and white film footage of these bears just sitting there begging like kids in a parade where candy is being thrown by the Shriners.
Right.
They're just running to get, and I remember it was marshmallows for sure, and I thought peanuts.
Yeah.
Well, I think we did that in our lifetime, Wendy.
Yeah, that's Bill's doubting it.
I'm not doubting it. I don't remember ever doing that.
That's where the signs come from. Please don't feed the animals, because that's what used to be allowed.
Oh. Yes. Teresa, you remember this, right?
I so do. I'm 55, and oh, by the way, I love listening to you guys. You make me smile and laugh all the time.
Oh, Teresa, thank you.
Yeah, we didn't go very often because we were from Indiana, and there were seven of us, but I have this vivid recollection. I must have been really little because this is the only thing I remember, was throwing a marshmallow to a polar bear who was standing up on his back legs, and he caught it in his mouth and just thunk. And everyone just cheered because he caught it in his mouth.
It's not easy.
It was so exciting for a little kid, you know?
Did you have to bring your own marshmallows, or was there a marshmallow vendor nearby at the zoo?
I think you could buy them at the food stands. I really do.
Yeah.
Because they allowed it big time, and Steve, you're right. Then it was like, please don't feed the animals, because they realized, you know what? Just plain sugar marshmallows are really not good of a good part of a balanced diet.
Right.
Well, thank you for remembering with us, Teresa. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Think of how much sugar a bear would have ingested on a daily basis if people all day long are just tossing marshmallows at the bear.
They also had the balloons that were clear. It was a clear balloon, and then there was like an insert with a Mickey Mouse ears.
Now, I don't know that they were allowed to do that.
Well, then it changed to just one little peanut-shaped thing.
That I remember.
With Mickey Mouse on it
still. Oh,
still
Mickey Mouse? Yeah.
And then they outlawed them completely because they realized that the rubber and the plastic, or the rubber balloon, when it would break, if an animal got caught, could choke on it.
Right, sure.
So they outlawed that. You can't even get a straw at Brookfield Zoo anymore.
But back then, a bear's diet consisted mainly of marshmallows and balloons.
And cigarettes. You could throw cigarettes to the bears.
The bears would smoke cigarettes, sure.
Jay, you remember this, don't you?
They'd have wine.
I remember vividly. And they used to make a profit on the peanuts and the marshmallows because they would sell them right by the attractions by the bears. And the biggie was always trying to get the bear
to dive into the water after a bunch of marshmallows.
Oh, no.
It was
that
fun.
Seems doesn't that seem a little cruel?
They were getting marshmallows.
It was hot. Wet
marshmallows.
And the funniest one was, you talked about the smoking, was in the gorilla cage. I still remember this. You know, I was probably 10 years old. Somebody had dropped a cigar in the gutter by the bars. And this big silverback gorilla was reaching for it, and he finally got it, pulled it inside, ran around that cage about 10 times, sat in the corner, and smoked it.
Was that Samson the gorilla, I want to say?
Yeah.
Samson the smoking gorilla.
Yeah.
And like you, when you have one all the time, I'm from LaGrange.
Yeah, so see, we went. That's what we did.
Kids would throw Marlboros at the gorillas. That's a good time.
Jay, thank you.
Happy though. Okay, talk to you.
Thanks so much. Lisa remembers it too, and I'm glad Steve Bertrand remembers it too, because sometimes I don't know what I remember. Lisa, you did it?
I'm calling to tell you, you are right, Wendy. I remember it too. And I just called to confirm with my mother that she used to buy us peanuts and marshmallows.
And
we would meet my
animals.
Aunt and my cousins at the zoo. And we would, that was like the highlight. If you could go to the dolphin show, that was great. We couldn't always go to that, but we at least had marshmallows to throw at the bears and peanuts at the monkeys. So definitely the highlights of our zoo trips. So we went quite a bit when I was young. I'm in my mid-40s. And I remember it vividly.
I wish we could still feed them. Maybe just healthy things.
Sure, it'd be all healthy things.
We could throw like lettuce leaves at them or radishes.
Yay, kale.
Bamboo shoots at the pandas.
Sure.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
All healthy.
Thank you, Lisa.
I'm sure they'd love it. Sure, have a good one.
Put a Whole Foods right there in the middle of the zoo.
And Roger, am I imagining things, but could you hold your hand out and let the elephants grab a peanut from your hand?
Yes, we did. I'm in my 50s, and we used to hold our hands out with peanuts in there, and the elephant would grab them out of our hands with their trunks. We would also feed the giraffes peanuts. The giraffes would lean over the fence and grab the peanuts out of your hand with their tongues.
They had really bad teeth. The giraffe's teeth were very yellow. It really, I remember that. And feeding the elephant, it was like a wet, elongated, hairy nostril, because that's pretty much what it was.
Yep.
It was kind of fun.
But it was fun. We had a ball as kids.
Thank you, Roger.
Thanks,
we appreciate
Roger.
It. See, the things we missed.
Yeah, you gotta remember those magical moments.
This
those
video
great.
Was put together by like the Field Museum or something. I don't know what they're doing, a Brookfield Zoo video. Like,
oh.
Friends of the Parks would not allow that video to be made in this day, but it was. Right. So we'll put a link on our Facebook
All right.
page as well.
It'll be up there. All right, we'll take a quick break. The news, and then hunky actor Robert Forster, who I hope it's okay to say when he has a big crush on.
I have for quite some time, ever since Alligator.
Yeah? All right, we'll talk to him about that. We'll find out what's up next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WG.
This is one of the most beautiful themes.
Isn't this haunting? This
yeah.
is from Twin Peaks, the series from the past that's coming back.
I'm pretty excited about it. Twin Peaks coming back, X-Files coming back. It's like history's repeating itself. And I think I'm the one who always whines saying, have they run out of ideas?
Right.
Why do they keep bringing things back?
Right. I've heard you say that.
But if I'm liking it, then I'm good with it.
Yep.
There's an actor who I saw in Twin Peaks. I saw him in Jackie Brown. I'm trying to think of all the times that I thought Robert Forster looked really spectacular on my big screen or my little screen.
Mm-hmm.
Or my private screen.
Now, here's my theory. We've been talking about the fact that not only is he going to be on, but you have a crush on him, and I believe that you have scared Robert Forster, which I didn't think was possible. He was scheduled to join us a minute or so ago, and Kevin said that no one can find him, that he said, I'm going to go somewhere where no one can find me.
Well, I told you that I'm rather shy sometimes.
Yes.
Very rarely.
That's the perfect description.
But I just have so many questions. Robert Forster is in this new movie called The American Side.
Looks great.
It does. We just watched the trailer. We'll let him tell the story if he calls. If not, then I'll just do it
All
in
right.
his voice.
That's fine. All right. That'll be fun to listen to.
But I have a question for you, because this is The American Side. It's been extended at the Wilmette Theater. It played last week. It's now a second week. It's going to be held over through June 30th,
mm-hmm.
and that's 1122 Central Avenue in Wilmette. Matthew Broderick's in it.
Mm-hmm. Robert Vaughn, which is worth the price of admission for me.
The man from Uncle.
I know. I love him.
And Janine Garofalo, did I see that
right? Janine Garofalo is in it, right.
And I love her. But here's my question to you. I just don't know why a movie like this gets released at a small theater like the Wilmette Theater. Why isn't it playing all over?
All right. A lot of times with an independent film like this, a low-budget independent film, they might not have a full distribution deal set up, so that means there's a limited number of prints.
Oh.
So maybe you're only getting one print per city. There might be a total of 25 or 30 nationwide just kind of floating around. I don't know for sure that's the case with this, but that's what you see a lot of times with a low-budget movie.
And with a low-budget movie, how do you get the star-studded cast?
That's curious because there are some names in this. So sometimes what will happen is an actor like Matthew Broderick might know one of the writers or the director or something, so maybe he does it as a favor. He's certainly not doing it for the money. It's a low-budget movie. So that's my guess. I mean, when and if we talk to Robert Forster, if you haven't scared him away, if anyone ever sees him again, we can ask him that. But, yeah, it's very impressive. Both Robert Forster and Robert Vaughn are guys that if you see their name in the credits, you go, well, I know what this guy can do. This is going to be great. I love those guys. So I'm hoping this is as good as it looks.
And I heard, I don't know if the directors were talking to Steve Cochran earlier, because there's a local guy who was one of the writers here,
mm-hmm.
Greg Sturr, co-writer, co-producer, and actor, and Jenna Ricker, director, co-writer, and co-producer. And they kept saying, you know, film noir and all this. And that's all I really remember from the interview.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly is that, Mr. Film Student?
It's just, it's kind of a style like Raymond Chandler novels. It's that like old timey detective kind of style.
Oh, okay.
You know, I would have, if I was doing one, for some reason they lend themselves well to black and white. It just kind of fits the atmosphere and the mood of the story. This movie's in color, but it seems to still do what you want to do with a film noir. This one's called Pop Noir, which is like film noir, but just different enough.
And is it a comedy? Is it a drama? Is it a little of each?
It looks like all that. Yeah.
I think there's espionage.
There might be some espionage.
I like
just
the old cars
bit.
In it, too. It's set, I believe, in the 70s. And I don't know how much of the story we should reveal, because if we tell the whole thing and then we do get Robert Forster on the line, what are we going
we'll
to talk
empty.
To him about?
We would be running on empty.
How many times I swooned over him?
Yeah, all right. So we don't want to give too much away. We're hoping that he joins us. But as of now, Kevin said that everyone who's ever met him says we can't find him.
It is so not my fault. If you're
you were
to
gushing
the,
about him
I
earlier.
I don't care. That's what you want in somebody.
I think you scared Robert Forster. I'm pretty sure you frightened him.
My God.
TV tough guy, movie tough guy, but he knows that you're on his trail, and he's like, uh-oh. Uh-oh.
No, we have him.
Is he coming? Is he going to be on?
Yes.
All right.
I did not scare him away. I'm a big fan. I find him to be a great actor and also on the very handsome side. Robert Forster joining us right now. Hello, Robert.
Hey, Wendy.
Robert,
yes.
Wendy has a huge crush on you.
I can say it myself.
Say it. Tell him.
Oh, what a poor choice.
Oh, we were so excited to talk to you. I have to tell you, my partner, Bill Leff, is a film student, a film lover. He's been in a couple of films. Perhaps you've seen Major League or Major League 2. He's had small parts in that. And when your name was pitched as a guest, I said, oh, my God, I love Robert Forster. And Bill kind of looked at me and he said, oh, really? You know who he is? I said, of course I know who he is. I love him. Oh, really? What has he been in? I said, well, I saw him in Twin Peaks. I saw him in Jackie Brown, Mulholland Drive, Alligator. Heroes was a show I watched on TV. Breaking Bad. Look, lo and behold, there's Robert Forster. And I had to prove myself that I was a fan of yours, Robert.
Well, you are. You surely are. I much appreciate it. It's great to be overrated. But I'm mighty delighted to have to be still standing.
But Robert,
I've done it for 50 years, and it's still a thrill.
But awesome. Don't you think Wendy having a sketchbook filled with pictures
Shut
that she
up.
Has made of you, that's a little weird, don't you think?
That one, well, we'll... We'll discuss that on the next film.
Good.
We were talking about the new film you're in, The American Side, and it's extended its play at the Wilmette Theater. It's going to be there for a second week, held over through June 30th. And we had seen the trailer. Looking forward to seeing it. Why don't you give us a little idea of what to expect in this?
It's a really lovely detective movie, a genre detective movie. Now, in the old days, I played the detective. In this movie, I play a guy who, a side guy, not the detective. But the detective is always fun because, you get to do wisecracks, and there are some great wisecracks in this movie. And it's about a place we have probably not seen much of, Buffalo, New York, and Niagara Falls. And as you probably know, there's two sides to the falls: the American side, the name of this movie, and the Canadian side. And anybody who's ever gone over in a barrel and survived has gone over the Canadian side. The American side is all rocks on the bottom. So anybody who makes the mistake of going over the falls in any kind of a barrel or any kind of a structure always ends up at the bad end of the rocks on the bottom. And so this is a mystery about a guy named Tesla, who was a big inventor and still has a big name and is the name of the car that bears his name.
Right.
So Tesla was a figure, and this has a mystery surrounding the guy Tesla.
Robert, had you worked with Robert Vaughn before? For some reason, I hadn't seen him in anything in years, and then I saw his name attached to this movie, The American Side. I love him.
I love him, too.
You do? And, yeah.
It's great to see his name and my name in the same movie.
Yes, it is.
And, we're both old-timers, but not out of the play yet.
Good.
I didn't have a scene with Robert, but I have met him over the years. A very good guy.
And Matthew Broderick is in it. Janine Garofalo, whom I haven't seen in a while.
Well, one of the reasons that this movie got such good players is because it's a terrific movie on paper. And when it's good on paper, all you can do is hope. But the movie maker, Jenna Ricker, did a beautiful job of making this movie. And Greg Stirr, who plays the detective, wrote it. So you've got a family of people in Buffalo who made this movie and are very proud of it. And the results, of course, are what you see. But Chicago apparently loved this movie, and they're bringing it back for a second week. Little tiny movies do not ordinarily get such nice treatment, but this is.
We're glad to hear that, Robert. Robert Forster's our guest. His movie, The American Side, is playing at the Wilmette Theater. It's been held over for another week. Robert, you've become something of a favorite with some of the top directors working today, Quentin Tarantino, David Lynch. Talk about the relationship you have with those two guys in particular, because those guys know how to tell a story.
They do, in fact. It's a business of who likes who and who wants to work with who, and all these guys, and also Alexander Payne and my very first director, John Huston. These guys, for whatever their reasons, decided to hire me. And all of the jobs that I've done for them have been without the usual chasing. This business requires actors pretty much to go hat in hand and chase jobs, but all of those jobs from the biggest guys have been, simple. I ran into Quentin at a coffee shop a few years ago when my career was really at the bottom, and I asked him what he was doing. He said, "I'm adapting Rum Punch, an Elmore Leonard novel. Why don't you read it?" He said. 6 months later, I walk into the same coffee shop, and there he was waiting for me with a script in his hand. He handed it to me and said, "Read this, see if you like it." No chasing,
wow.
No begging, none of the things that usually go on. And even the big actors, agents who went to Quentin and said, no, you can't hire Forster, you got to hire my guy. He apparently, and I've seen it in print, and he said so too, said, "No, this job, this part is going to go to Robert Forster. Apparently, he had figured out I had the world weariness by then to handle the job, and you know, it was a big start for me. It was a gift which gave me buoyancy and has given me a career for the last 20 years.
That's excellent. And Twin Peaks, we were talking about this earlier today. It was very bizarre and very out there, but it had such a following, and I'm so happy to see that it is back in action for a TV series. I think it's in post-production now, so everything's been shot at this point?
It has. This is an interesting movie because David Lynch shot it like a movie, 140-day shoot. That's an extremely long shooting schedule. But he shot in several different places, and every time we got to a location that I was involved in, I flew to it or traveled to it and shot my stuff. And so other actors worked on it periodically here and there, and when locations that they were in got on the schedule, he shot it out. You went to here and there, and partly in up in the Twin Peaks area, up in Seattle, and other places.
I hope the log lady's in it. I know you can't reveal information.
I think she died.
Oh, I think you're right.
Can't reveal anything.
Oh, don't say. You don't
have to
tell
know.
Us.
I'm so anxious to see it because, you know, the first series was based on, you know, the death of Laura Palmer, and it's just going to be so interesting to see what transpires in Twin Peaks since that time. I can't wait to see it. Do you know when that comes out?
Yes. I'd say 1 year from now it will have been either shown or it will be in process. I think that the second quarter of next year, which begins in what, January, March, maybe March or April of next year on Showtime, and I don't know how many episodes there will be, but David Lynch will. He's the guy that's putting the picture together as he wishes. This is an artist. This is the kind of guy that you love working for, because whatever he says goes. He doesn't have to run up a flight of stairs to ask people, is this all right? And he's very secure on the set. He's one of those directors, and this is my first test for a director, whether he knows a good shot when he shoots it. And sometimes you see David shoot a shot and cut, and you hear him, he says cut, and then you look at him, and he's thinking about the shot, and he's rolling it around. Sometimes he closes his eyes. Sometimes he looks at the video repeat, and eventually he says either shoot it again or cut. Move it on. We've got it. He is a guy very, very secure and an artist. People wait for him to say what he wants to do, and then they do it.
We're talking to the great Robert Forster, one of the finest character actors of our generation. Robert, I've noticed that in your career you have played a lot of sheriffs, a lot of marshals, a lot of detectives. Why do you think that is?
Why?
Yeah.
Boy, I wish it was because I was real good in a mystery. And, you know, maybe it is. All I know is I can say this. I almost got on a jury here in Los Angeles about a month ago. And when the defense lawyer asked me what I thought about the police, he had mentioned that he knew me, I said, yes, you're right. I've played a lot of cops, and I've been around a lot of cops, and I'm not sure that I wouldn't be suspicious if the defendant didn't take the stand in his own defense. And he looked at me, he looked at the judge, he used that finger, that not the middle one, the get out of here thumb, okay? And
yeah.
That was the end of me. They didn't want me on their jury. They didn't want somebody who thought that well of the police.
Oh, my God.
I've been a cop.
That could have been your best role ever, Robert.
Well, it was interesting, and I'm sorry I didn't stay on the jury because it was very, very interesting. Watch this judge in action, and he was giving everyone in that courtroom a lesson in civics, how our process works. It's a great process. Not only do they have to bring in witnesses that prove the case, they got to prove the case. The defense is there to make sure that the defendant has a clean shot at it, and the prosecutors are there to present an ironclad case of the guilt of the accused. And if they don't do it, we let them go. We have a very, very good system.
Absolutely.
It would be so weird, though, to be on trial for something and you look up and Robert Forster is one of the jurors. I wouldn't even pay attention to what my charges were.
Oh, don't worry. They won't put me on any juries. I'm pretty sure of it.
Robert, am I remembering this right? There used to be a show on called Police Story, and I remember you being on it, but it seemed like every time you were on it, you were a different cop. Is that possible? I'm remembering that right?
You are remembering it exactly correct, because those shows were anthology shows. Those shows were brought in by a cop whose story it was.
Is it Joseph Wambaugh?
Different cop. Yes, Wambaugh wrote the pilot, and he supervised the series, but a lot of different cops brought in a story that they had lived, chances are, and they told their story, and the writers created one. And then, as you noticed, I was on that show, boy, I can't remember how many times, maybe six times, and I played a lot of different cops whose story was rendered in that episode. I did a two-parter once about the skater, Ty Babylonia. I played her father, and this cop worked not only as a cop, but as a he worked in a grocery store at night stocking shelves so that his daughter could get the kind of lessons and ice time that she needed to compete. This was a very, very loving father of an aspiring Olympic ice skater. Mm-hmm. And she credits him with a great deal of her success. He slugged it out for her. And it was a two-parter, as I remember, and a real good show.
Well, you are working steadily, and it's a pleasure to meet you. Everybody should go see The American Side. It's being extended at the Wilmette Theater for a second week, held over throughout June. So go to wilmettetheater.com. Such a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Wendy. Thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure. I've been in Chicago. I shot pictures in Chicago. It is one of the great towns for eating and music. And and my father, just so I make one last thing, my father, who was on the Ringling Circus, always said to me, if you get to Chicago, take a look at the Field Museum. They've got a very great display of elephants. And my father was an elephant trainer on the Ringling during the 1930s. He always liked Chicago for the Field Museum.
Wow. Well, that's next time you're here, you got to come by and see us, okay?
You're a gent.
Oh, you are too, sir.
We'll
Thank
take you
so
to the
much.
Museum. You come visit us, and we'll take you down the street to the museum. How does that sound?
Be delighted.
All awesome. Right. Thank you, Robert. We appreciate it. Best of luck to you.
Thanks very much. Bill and Wendy.
That's Robert Forster, everybody, from The American Side, playing at the Wilmette Theater. A quick break, and we'll find out what's coming up on Roe and Anna Show next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.